They're trying to train the body's immune system to target the right part of the virus, because getting it wrong can be dangerous.
We know that historically with coronaviruses, that if you do vaccinate with the wrong kind of vaccine, for instance in domestic cats who have a similar viral infection, that you can make the disease more severe.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. December 16th, 2021. Thank you for joining me today. Fantastic show planned for you today. We're going to get into a little bit more on a topic that we haven't talked about in a while, and that is the PCR illusion and how it is yet again crumbling right in front of our eyes. And this is because of what's coming up on the 31st. Many of you may know what I'm talking about. We'll get to that when we get to that topic today. We're also going to be talking about the illusion that is the pandemic of the unvaccinated and how Omicron is being shown specifically in pretty much every location to be almost entirely vaccinated. And then, of course, the other parts of that unknown percentage, we also have to remember that there's a huge gap in the not vaccinated versus unvaccinated group where a lot of people are unvaccinated who are either one or doubly, I guess, injected these days, or possibly even three, depending on where you are in the world, and you still go down as unvaccinated. We're going to talk about a little bit in regard to some interesting topics of the not the collapsing athlete topic, but something that ties into that. I'll leave it at that, and we'll get to it in a minute. And then, of course, we're going to talk about something in regard to air-powered vaccines, as well as powdered vaccines, and it's one and the same. We'll talk about this today and how alarming this is. I actually put off an entire conversation about nanotechnology and the information and the technological advances they've been making in this exact field for another day, because that's an entire show. Possibly the next show that I do will be that entirely. But to start off today, before we get into the illusion that is the entire COVID-19 pandemic, I want to make sure I shouted out a couple of things I put up today that I knew you were waiting for, a lot of you in the chat and the community. That I only just got up today that I did a long time ago. And this was some of the new songs I put out on our T-Lab SoundCloud. Now, I also made a playlist here. So this is a kind of like the de facto first T-Lab album, essentially. I uploaded three new songs, two of which are covers and one is my original. And I just wanted to throw that out there for you guys to check out. So these are all things that are really important that tie back to my, you know, things that I wrote most of these before we ever got to what we do today. And as you all have seen from specifically from Money Game, it's something that I wrote a long time ago that really ties into today, as well as American Dream and how it's been in me for a long time. Now, I just hope you guys can check those out, enjoy them. One of the covers is Love Is My Religion, a Ziggy Marley song, which I really, really like. The other one is Nodding Nottingham. If you guys aren't familiar with this song, this is one of the most impactful songs on my childhood. It's a song from Robin Hood, the cartoon, and it's one of the most emotionally impactful things that happened to me. Like, it just, at a very core level, it impacted me, made me sad, and I didn't understand what I was feeling. And it's a really sad song part in the movie where these people are being put in chains because they don't do what the sheriff tells them, and it's visceral. And you listen to it and you'll get what I mean about why it feels connected to today and how it's obvious. The song essentially, you know, there's good things everywhere, but not in Nottingham, you know, and that's the idea. I feel like that's where we feel like it's happening today. Or at least that's what they want us to feel. Please enjoy the music. This was just left up from before. Now, one other thing I wanted to shout out was a Substack from Technocratic Dystopia. Doing some good work in general. But this was one thing that I wanted to make sure we shouted out because they included our song in this, as well as a bunch of other people that we've been shouting, pointing to Lucas Lyon, Savad, great, great musicians out there. He actually has part two that just came out. Anyway, our song is in there as well. Please check this out. The whole focus is about rebel music, and I love it because it's important today. Whether that's music or comedy or art or whatever it is, these things impact the direction, whether we realize it or not. And you have to support those that support you, right? Now, a couple of quick notes on censorship and manipulation around COVID-19. I think you guys would find this very relevant. Orwell in the chat, who actually is currently, it looks like, just joined us. Let me open this up real quick. has been censored on Twitter in a really interesting way, by the way. And this is what I find. Mute that real quick. Sorry. There we go. Sorry, I was opening up the other window. In a really interesting way, because they blocked her out of her Twitter account, but then changed the email, and now she's able to try to log back in, but she can't. And I found this to be really, really telling about the kind of manipulation that they're doing today. That they're not really the same as like the indefinite suspension, right? Where you're not really gone. You're just sort of censored indefinitely until they get pushed in the wrong direction. Oh, well, they're still there. We were still trying to figure it out for that 17-year period, right? Here is Orwell trying to log in to her Twitter account because they told her she was pushed out. And it's going, oh, enter your information. She does. And it says incorrect. And you can see this, where was it right here? Oh, so she tries to enter the email and it says send to an email if you want to try to unlock it for a password. And it's sent to some random email. At first, I was thinking, what is that, mine? And no, because my first name is shorter and my TLAB email starts with a T, not an N. But nonetheless, it's strange that they would do this. What it really shows you is that they're just trying to find other ways to push people out that are doing good work. People like Orwell and Starr and people that are helping the TLAB community and spreading good information. It's just outrageous that they're what I mean. The joke I made in the office today was, yeah, because this is obviously what the good people do, right? The honest people out there fighting for truth. They take sneaky, slimy actions like this to do things around their own guidelines. It's just pathetic. Twitter's gross. And so is YouTube and all the rest, because they are absolutely openly on side with an agenda. Whether they even if they believe it's the right thing, they know internally that they're challenged. They're at the very least breaking their own principles. Right? They have no integrity here. They're violating what they lay down for us to follow as if it's the right thing and then do what they want anyway. It's just childish and disgusting. But the other part, which I thought you'd also find interesting, this came from my brother today. This is something that was sent directly to his phone. For those in the podcast, this is what it says. Directly to his phone, unsolicited. California Department of Public Health. As the holiday season gets underway, the best way to protect yourself and your loved ones is to get vaccinated against COVID. That's what they'll tell you. I aggressively disagree with that. If you are vaccinated, get your booster shot today. Right. So if you're not vaccinated, go get your first one. So then you can go get your second one and then get your booster after that. Because that's why would anybody do this, especially knowing that they're already going, but a fourth one's coming soon. Anyway, it says getting vaccinated has been proven to be safe. Weird how they left that effective. Isn't that funny how there's no longer, we're not talking about effect now because they're open. We'll get to it in a minute. Now they're going, well, it doesn't work with transmission anymore, even though it never really has. And all the data shows that, but they're just going to quietly remove effective after acting like they're saying the same thing. But wasn't it just safe and effective like 2 days ago? Were you lying then? Were you wrong then? I guess it doesn't matter. We only focus on today, but getting vaccinated has been proven to be safe. Are you serious? Proven? What about the people that just had strokes? The person who has a heart attack, the people that have verifiable diagnosed vaccine-induced thrombocytopenia. No, let's just call it that. Thrombocytopenia is the only, I say that only because VITT is what Dr. Bhakti pointed out long before that was even discussed openly in the public, in the mainstream. So it's important to reiterate that. Regardless, if that's possible, which they've admitted it is, you can't say safe because safe means dangerous, means able to cause harm. Is this dangerous by definition? Yes. Therefore, it's not safe. Words have meaning, guys, and this is why they play with them, because they want you to lose that meaning. But it says the best way to protect yourself. But then it goes on to say, can we count on you to get vaccinated for the holidays? This isn't a joke. This is an unsolicited question directly from the government to you personally. Are you going to do what you're told? Hit one. Yes, I'll get the vaccine. Hit two. Yes, we'll get booster shot. Hit three, already vaccinated with booster, or hit four, will not vaccinate, or hit five, other concerns. How much you want to bet anything but one, two, or three will prompt more follow-up tweets that you have to respond to? And if you don't respond to, you'll probably get somebody who shows up at your door. This is my opinion, but this is outrageously invasive and alarming. And oh, remember when we were told that it was a choice? We're still here. Oh, did you decide to say yes today? Okay, I'll be back tomorrow. No is never an option, guys. It's never been an option, not from day one. They knew that. They know it now. But I love how it says, reply stop to cancel. He didn't initiate this to begin with. I mean, that's what's so crazy. So you can stop right now. They'll just send you the next one. Because clearly it doesn't matter whether you wanted it or not. It's about anybody everywhere, and it's all for your safety. And of course, if we're going by their definition of safe, that's a little, that's a quite alarming. But the first part of this is how taking that concept into this discussion about Twitter, right? So we're watching how it's their misrepresentation of the facts and forcing this down your throat. Again, to the idea of what the good people would do, right? Would they try to lie and manipulate and do things sneakily behind the scenes, or would they just be honest? Well, here's Twitter. Disclosed TV points out, alert, be aware of this new rule in Twitter's updated COVID-19 misleading information policy. This is pretty interesting, actually. It says down here at the bottom, false or misleading claims. Basically, this is what will get you deleted or censored. One of the things they list, false or misleading claims that people who have received the vaccine can spread or shed the virus. And then in parentheses, or symptoms or immunity to unvaccinated people. Okay, so they're literally I'll just read my tweet since I said that exactly. I said Twitter is openly taking the stance that it's impossible that, quote, people who receive the vaccine can shed the virus, spread the virus, despite that fact being openly admitted on corporate media the same day. COVID has broken all of these people. Maybe this is the Twitter equivalent of Facebook's protected opinion. I don't know. Who cares? They're all liars, and they're all obviously just... We're in the middle of this dissolving narrative. I mean, how else do you explain something like this? Right this moment, and I've already shown you this weeks, months before this, they've been admitting, whether Delta, whatever their reason is, that this is not stopping transmission. Anyone with two brain cells to rub together has known that for a long time because they stated it openly on the mainstream, on corporate media. Nonetheless, weeks, months later, here's Twitter going, you can't say that people who are vaccinated are able to spread that virus because that's fake news, according to Twitter. It's just silly. Now, what is Elsa to say? The vaccines will cause you to be sick, spread the virus, or would be more harmful than getting COVID. Well, first of all, the vaccines will cause you to get sick and spread the virus. They can. I think they're going to stick with the word will and be like, well, we don't know. It could, or, you know, that kind of thing. Tweets that incite fear or misrepresent the ingredients or contents of COVID vaccines. Right. So just first of all, realize if they're that flagrantly wrong with one of those points, let's go ahead and assume that they don't know what they're talking about. But it says tweets that mischaracterize the nature and science behind mRNA vaccines. What they're saying, this is all the stuff that we do. None of those are what we're actually doing, though. You see, we're not mischaracterizing anything. We're stating the facts that they've already decided you're not allowed to say, whether they believe it's fake or not. Tweets that claim vaccines alter genetic code. Guys, this has been admitted by like Science Magazine, by Science. Nature. These are huge scientific publications that put out studies that say, yeah, more evidence this thing can alter your DNA. This is just pathetic. Tweets that misrepresent or misuse official reporting tools and statistics. Misuse them? Oh, you mean like they do where they play with data and alter it to make it show a certain picture? That's only okay when the government does it. But back to the point. False or misleading claims that people who have received the vaccine can spread the virus. That's the point. What they actually tried to say. So, first of all, here's what COVID-1984 put out, which I think is really relevant. The same day when that Twitter was out, spoiler alert, it has been changed since then. Before it was changed, this is what Walensky said live on the air. God darn it, I'm mad at myself right now because I'm like, did I download that? And I got to stop doing that because apparently I didn't. I don't know why, but let's watch it right here.
Our vaccines are working exceptionally
well. And that's why I'm mad at myself for forgetting. Okay, let me grab it real quick. Often as I go through these, there's these tweet ones that I'll tend to forget to grab real quick. The reason obviously I want to grab them, as you can see what I'm doing now, is because they're low often on those. And it's good to have them anyway, to be honest. As you guys all know, these things disappear very quickly today. In really obvious ways, too. Like, there's one thing we're going to look at today that was removed, and we have an archive of it, and it's just pretty sad that they still try to do that. Okay, here we got the video. I believe I got every other one. Go ahead and say that now, but I could be wrong. Let's see. Here's the video, and this is going to make you laugh, especially because of how much I focus on people like Walensky and how just seemingly uninformed they are as the head of the CDC.
Our vaccines are working exceptionally well. They continue to work well for Delta with regard to severe illness and death. They prevent it. But what they can't do...
But again, the data does not back that up. We'll go over that again in a minute. They can keep screaming that all they want. The data does not back that up. The data does not back that up. The data does not back that up.
Anymore is prevent transmission. Work well for Delta with regard to severe illness and death. They prevent it. But what they can't do anymore is prevent transmission.
They cannot prevent transmission. Just make sure we hear that. For those out there that are just tuning in to troll because we're fake news, make sure you open your ears a little bit so you hear what Walensky just said. These do not stop transmission. Now, I don't care what you want to argue. Well, it's because of the unvaccinated. It doesn't, whatever. That facts, I could try to prove that to you for 36 hours and you'd still walk away thinking I'm wrong because you don't want to hear what we have to say. There's people like that on all sides, by the way. There are people on the side of what we think is our side that would do the same thing in regard to stuff that they don't like or they think they've already decided on, right? There's plenty of topics in COVID-19, even on this side of it, that are not completely fleshed out, that we're still, people are still assuming. I mean, even let's just say something that I would argue is certainly possible, like a concept of whether this is all about or even in part about depopulation. That's a conspiracy theory to people on the mainstream side. Now, in an objective position, I would be like, okay, it's certainly possible. And we've heard people say things like that. There's been open discussions about how we need to reduce the population. That doesn't mean we can prove that is what this is or that that has happened. I still think it makes no sense to remove, which is essentially your chattel, the people you abuse and use to accomplish your goals. Anyway, my point in saying that is just simply that we need to stand back and take a larger view, right? But she is saying, I mean, why? That's right. The point was, while this is currently stated on Twitter that you're not allowed to say that, she literally just comes out and says that, that if you have the vaccine then and you get sick, you can spread it. It does not stop transmission. Hilarious. You know, alarming at the same time, right? It's almost, this is why it's macabrely hilarious. Like, it's, we should be like screaming in horror that this is being openly stated and we're still arresting people and we're still forcing people while they do this. But let's watch the rest of it.
But what they can't do anymore is prevent transmission.
Oh, that's right. It just repeats.
But what they can't do anymore is prevent transmission.
Now, of course, there's more to that clip. And obviously she goes on to make the argument of, you know, well, this or that because of the unvaccinated or it's this. It doesn't matter. If it's not stopping transmission, that's the point of this discussion. And as he goes on to say, just to be clear, I don't support censorship and neither of us do. No one's calling for anybody to be censored, not even CNN. But the point is that they're censoring everybody else for something they lay out arbitrary, sort of like in the beginning where they screamed, you can't challenge the WHO right up until they challenge the WHO in every possible way, including lockdowns and boosters. They can though. Okay, that makes sense. But then if we do it, we're censored. See, it's just arbitrary. It has nothing to do with anything other than narrative. And we should all be seeing that by now. And then that's the link to the next point, which is 10 minutes after we took the screen, after they took the screenshot, the rule had been altered. Now it says false or misleading claims that people who have received the vaccine can spread or shed the vaccine. Ah, got it. Got it. Okay. So now we're going, and by the way, that's not even a false or misleading claim. You know why? Because Dr. Warren, who is the discoverer of this mRNA, literally spoke up on Twitter and said, obviously this can shed. Probably too long ago to pop up. Yeah, nothing's popping up, but there's plenty of documentation about how this happens, how it sheds, how the spike protein can be shed, how it can then catch, and how the Salk Institute has pointed out that it's in and of itself can cause disease. All this is, I've done over 100 times on the show. But of course, it doesn't even, nothing matters in regard to the Twitter narrative control. It's about what you're allowed to say. And we pointed this out in real time many times, how they openly censor things that are currently being proved. Or how about the fact that people who stand up and say, my doctor told me I got myocarditis because of the injection, and they censor it. Because you're not allowed to say that, as they admit that it can happen and that people are getting it. Like, that's clownish. How are we going to pretend that Twitter knew that investigated that person's medical information? Of course not. They just simply censored it because you can't say that happened. It's that simple. So here we are, where they're just going, oh, well, we'll just alter it to change it to another thing that's a little further down the road, but still is ridiculous to censor. But go look at the top again. The vaccines will cause you to be sick, spread the virus. Well, we just admitted that it can absolutely cause you to spread the virus. So the first bullet point is still there. So there's Walensky stupidly saying exactly what they're telling you you're not allowed to say. Right? I mean, it's just, it's becomes unreal. Before the rule was changed. as we all get censored for talking about all the things that have continued to happen, right? Which is a badge of honor. It's fantastic, right? We're on a brand new pirate channel tonight because we just keep jumping from channel to channel because these people are trying to stop the flow of information. As you all know that watch this show, we prove everything, or rather I should say more, we cite everything that we're talking about. Now, here is another one to start out before we jump into the pandemic of the vaccinated discussion. Breaking from Politics for All, a laboratory leak, apparently. Now, this is what they're telling you. Now, here's what you're supposed to think going forward. Now, a laboratory leak is now the more likely story. Okay, let me write that down. Now I'm supposed to say it's the more likely story. Got it, guys. Thank you. MPs have been told. Got it. Because after 2 years of searching, an animal host has never been found. Jesus, remember when we talked about that like 3 months into this and we showed you all the data that said that's very clearly not how this was supposed to be? Yeah, crazy again, isn't it? It may even have been engineered. Guys, this is exactly, I mean, look, here's the point. As I said, funny how long ago we told that the, dang it, how that we told you that the zoonotic transfer claim was verifiably and likely intentionally wrong using scientific research, peer-reviewed, and were then repeatedly censored for. Oh, so now we can talk about this theory again. Okay, thanks, mainstream media. That's fantastic. But here's the main point. I still feel quite strongly that the lab leak theory is the cover-up. Now, that doesn't mean that that's not possible. You guys have seen my extensive, I've done multiple videos before even COVID-19 about the reality of this stuff, about the bioengineering and the manipulation and the weapons and the things they work on that have leaked and been used. But first of all, it's not a leak if they're working on a weapon. Like the idea that it's a lab leak somehow suggests that they were just clumsily, accidentally let something out in the bottom of their shoe, which, by the way, has happened before in the United States. Specifically for Dietrich. Funny. But we're talking about something that has been worked on, right? It should not be a shadow of a doubt. There should not be a shadow of a doubt in your mind based on everything we've seen. And if you write in regard to the gain of function discussion. Now, what's funny is we talk about that. And you know what all the people lost on the left side of the two-party paradigm think? Rand Paul. And they dismiss it. You talk about ivermectin. They think Joe Rogan. And they dismiss it. Without thinking about it, right? Because all they think about is what they're told to think about in that context. But I'm not talking about Rand Paul or the couched corner of that narrative they want you to look at. I'm talking about the big part of this discussion we've been saying from the moment this started, how it's been obvious there's been gain-of-function research and how it was obvious that it was kicked over to China in 2014. It continued well past that, both in the US and in China. Remember we talked about all this even before COVID and then we continued in the beginning? My point is that this is a cover part of the story. It's all very clearly, carefully been put together. So probably we end up going, China did it, bad guy. They pointed to us, bad guy. We keep this divide even going amongst that situation. And they keep making you think that it's not them orchestrating something or using something organic, however you want to look at it, to achieve a larger end. These groups worked together to make this thing long before we got to whatever we think happened now. Now, you can argue within that. I've given you my theory breakdown a million times, but it's just as possible at this point that this was something that was worked on, that they then used against one or the other, or that they basically tried to do something and it did accidentally get out. But either way, that's not a lab leak. That's a bioweapon. That is a manipulated weapon that either got out or was used. Now, again, I'm also going to point out that there's a larger part of this that you could argue, and I've made the case before to make it plausible. I'm still unsold about where it really goes, that none of that is true. That this is an absolute manipulation of something that was not the larger and the lab leak story. And that's exactly why it's been placed over this. Right. And this is the part of the show that people get upset with when they want blatant, here's what you're supposed to think type of news, because we don't know. And shocker, guess what? Nobody else does either. So all I'm trying to do is show you the nuance here and that it's a much larger. Now, back to the point. I think this is the cover up part of the story. And that's why they're now going, okay, now we can start talking about that again. Oh, it's even engineered. Oh my gosh. Remember when we were being censored for that a long time? Yeah, I mean, it's just such a joke. The whole evolution of this whole, the story, which brings us into the current dumpster fire of the narrative that they're in. The part of the larger dumpster fire They're right now, just like the PCR illusion and everything else that we've catastrophically broke down, or even this exact part of the topic that we broke down in like the third month of this narrative. And now we're pointing back at it now after we've all been said, right? This is the current part of that kind of nonsense. Right this moment, it's blatantly clear that Omicron, or even from within the narrative, right? If you don't believe that's what's happening, doesn't matter. Their narrative, they're telling you most of what's happening in regard to the problem is in the vaccinated. Both, and then I'm going to show you in a moment, again, from previous data we've shown you and from the expose, that the data, again, of the most current week shows you in the UK and elsewhere that it is the most clear slanted problem to the vaccinated. That's whether Delta, Omicron, or whatever else you think is happening. But here it is from Dr. Eli David, researcher, lecturer. We've met reference in the past, but he says, Israel, as of today, this is the 12th, of course, it's gotten worse since then, 81% of Omicron cases are triple vaccinated. Triple, not two, triple. So this whole push they keep screaming about that the third one is what does, the third one stops Omicron with nothing but their hopes to make that the case. Also today, so simultaneously, as they know the vast majority of problems that are happening are because of the vaccinated, or at the very least, the vast majority of the COVID problem is because of the vaccinated, they then decide to tighten restrictions on only the unvaccinated to fight Omicron. Clown world. Absolutely ridiculous. And the only thing they're going to do is say, well, the only reason we're in this position where all of the vaccinated are the problem is because of the unvaccinated. Don't even try to find logic in it. They're going to point back to some magic argument that you're the one person in the whole crowd that's making variants rapidly, even though everything shows you the opposite, including all the science around this exact topic before COVID started. Just like everything else, COVID somehow magically warped our understanding of history and facts and science and everything else. Well, here is December 12th again. This is the same article, 15 new Omicron cases found. Here's the point. The newly reported cases bring the total to 67. Well, out of those 67, only 13 are not fully vaccinated. Note that they didn't say not vaccinated. They said not fully. Every single one of these cases are in people that have shots in their arms. I've been showing you this across the board. Now, there are cases, let's say, that we're being told anyway, in places like the US and others that they're claiming, or specifically, let's say, South Africa, where they say, well, here's an unvaccinated person that did catch it. I haven't gotten to see the data, so I don't know whether these people had one shot and they're still calling them unvaccinated, but it's that obvious when you can look at this kind of thing. Whether it's 80, 90%, all of it, it's pretty damn clear that this is vaccinated that is causing the problem. And we keep seeing these cases of people where there's like parties of only vaccinated people where everyone got tested before and every single person's got three boosters or three shots and then there's an outbreak between all of them. That keeps happening. You show me those scenarios that are happening at the football games or the parties or the beach or the park or these places where people, all these anti-vaxxers are challenging the narrative. Well, where are these massive super spreader events that you all told us would happen? That's not to say that they can't make one or point to something and say that's what's happening, but even then they still haven't. Pretty interesting. It's in the vaccinated, as we just showed you, even the Telegraph and everybody else pointing out, Omicron wave driven by the young, healthy, vaccinated population. It's right in your face, and people are refusing to look because they don't want to admit that they took a wrong choice. Here's the expose. Whilst you were distracted by a Christmas party, the UK government released a report confirming the fully vaccinated account for 4 in every 5 COVID deaths in England since August. As far as I can tell, and maybe it's just because I'm in this lane, I don't see anybody else other than the expose and myself continuing to follow up on these reports. Actually, I should take that back. I just don't see him anymore because he's on his own Medium or Substack, I think. And people still send me his stuff, but Alex Bernanson was one of the ones also pointing this out. I think this is actually the first place that I saw it was when he reported it, maybe when he was interviewing with Joe Rogan. 4 in every 5 COVID deaths in England since August. You can look at this for yourself, and you know I'm going to show you the report in 1 second. Serious questions need to be answered as to why Boris Johnson's government have decided to restrict the freedoms of the unvaccinated population through the introduction of vaccine passports. Yeah, that thing that was also fake news up until it wasn't. When the latest official data shows that the vaccinated population have accounted for 3 in every 5 COVID cases, 3 in every 5 COVID hospitalizations, and 4 in every 5 COVID-19 deaths. Now, I would argue that it's higher than 3 and 5 on those first two because, and this is the same thing the expose would say, I'm sure, that if you dive into this and understand that there are people within this that are being called one thing when really there's something else. The fully vaccinated definition has been an obvious large part of the illusion post-vaccination. Now, you can read this through this for yourself. All the data is clear. They always do a great job on this website of breaking it down, giving you the source material. And see, it says right here, they're showing you the past weeks. We've been doing the same thing. Very important. Here's the data. Now, again, try to do this reasonably quickly just to break down the most important parts. This is week 46 to 49. So week 50, right? It's up until the end of week 49. And it shows you undeniably, as we just broke it down for you, 3 and 5, 3 and 5, and 4 and 5, right? Here's the cases. And the only reason they would argue that it's 3 and 5 is because when you look at the over under 18 number, which is a large amount of just cases, but except when you go down to the deaths, just real quickly to compare, right, just to make this point. So if you had the most amount of cases in the unvaccinated 18-year-olds, wouldn't you think that they would just be dying all over the place, right? Except no, there's only 3 unvaccinated deaths in the under 18 in the same time period. That's it. Same thing. You go back to the week before, it's basically not there. Okay. So explain for me then how if there's 312,000 cases in the under 18 in the same time period, there's only 3 deaths. Yeah. Doesn't that continue to bolster exactly what we keep telling you? They're not at risk. They're not at risk. They're not at risk. This is something that is dramatically lower than the flu. So my point being, you remove those cases that are nothing in regard to what's really happening, and you see that it's dramatically slanted on the vaccinated. As weirdly enough, the cases are always heavily slanted to 30 to 39 category. So not vaccinated in 30 to 39, there's only 34,000 cases. Fully vaccinated, 116,570. The vast majority. 3/4, I would argue. Going down to this was emergency care. Same point. You can look as the most at risk out of a total of 1,245 hospitalizations of people over 80. Only 228 of them were not vaccinated. Now, look, if you want to argue that this is just old people dying because they were sick and dying already, wouldn't it be 50-50? Right? Or how about slanted towards the not vaccinated? Because aren't they supposed to be more at risk with the not vaccination? Like, there's no way you explain this data. Fully vaccinated, there's 985 over 80 deaths. Only 228 not vaccinated. At the very least, it should be 50-50. If you keep telling us that this is supposed to be helping them, if it's just to roll the dice, if they're old and may die naturally or with other comorbidities, it should be 50-50, or at the very least, slanted on the side that they're supposed to be more at risk. Nobody cares to dive into this. They just make up some weird hand-waving argument and say, nah, you're fake news, anti-science, whatever. Okay, take a step back, 7 to 79. 1,206 total hospitalizations. In the fully vaccinated, 839. Not vaccinated, 315. We're not even including the only one dose versions. It's only another 50 or 60, but it matters. Basically from below 30 and down is where you have people that are slanted towards the not vaccinated problem. But that is a small amount. The vast majority are on the side of the vaccinated. It's this clear. It's just this clear. Here's the deaths. And this is the most obvious. 1,422 total deaths over 80. 216 deaths of that total in the not vaccinated, 1,158 deaths over 80 in the fully vaccinated. Same point. Shouldn't that be 50-50 or very much so slanted towards the fully vaccinated with less numbers if that was the case? There's just no explanation there. You can't pretend like they're just normal old people dying when there's so few happening in regard to the not vaccinated. This is people getting the injection and hurting themselves, increasing their issue because they already have comorbidities. And that's the point. Only 6% of the entire total death count in the U.S., at least when they took this study, were people with only COVID. Every other one had at least almost 3 other comorbidities. This is a pandemic of the injected. Don't forget, that doubles your risk of cardiac event. I'm sure that's great for elderly people. It increases your risk of infection by catching COVID by 50% within the first 7 days. That goes on to be a positive increase for the first 20 days. So you have an increased risk of catching in COVID for 20 days. On top of that, it suppresses your immune system while that's happening. Lymphocytopenia. But let's pretend like, and these are all verifiable facts, peer-reviewed science that have shown you this is clearly happening. And let's pretend like none of that has an effect on their health. Painful to look how obvious this is. After 60 days, it only gets worse. Same death count, 60 days. 1,832 total over 80, only 234. That only went up 30 days. Look at that. 216 down here, 234, 30 days later. That's both not vaccinated. I mean, good God. What is that? Another 80, 20, something more? I mean, guys, look, it's just crazy. And that's 30 days, but look at the other number. It went up from 1,158 in the fully vaccinated to 1,538. It's the saddest thing I've ever seen that we can be staring at these people suffering on paper in clear writing, and we're told we're crazy. And they keep forcing it on these people. Oh, just get the third shot because that does everything. Well, that's not true, though. Right? We're watching these people with three boosters get sick, triple vaccinated. So they're lying to you, or they don't know. I don't know what's worse. But here's the Jerusalem Post, again, from the 13th, telling you, well, the third shot that they're screaming is going to work, or Fauci says he hopes it will work, likely going to work for you, is already being shown in studies that's four times less effective against Omicron than Delta. It's not, so at the very least, it's dramatically less effective than what you thought was happening before. And before, that data also backs up the same thing with Delta and everything else. By the way, remember, they're still telling you Delta is the predominant issue. So that still, that clearly is relevant to Delta and anything else. So there's the science. Are we trusting the science? Apparently not. Javad says you're not vaccinated fully until you've got three. Even though they just admitted that it's not working and they're already pushing the fourth shot. But yeah, you're not, go ahead and get the next one. Highwire points out, competing definitions of fully vaccinated emerge around the country. Weird, it's almost like we predicted this coming. Remember how fake news that was like 30 seconds ago? Now they're changing the definition everywhere. And it's all been, this was already happening. And I've told you this the whole damn time. Here's something funny. Here's their definition on their metadata or their SEO, whatever you want to call it. Competing definitions of fully vaccinated emerge around the country, it says on the post. But when you click on it, it's weird how the title's different. Booster, man, names begin. I found that strange. Like, it's like they want you to get, oh, look at that. And then it kind of redirects you. Competing definitions of fully vaccinated emerge around the country. How does that even make sense? This is the same argument that if we're going to pretend like the government is willing to force shots on everybody around the country, but yet simultaneously not willing to, and which I'm not saying they should, absolutely we should resist this with all possible effort, but they're going to force the shots, but they're not going to make sure that we have the same definition of how many you need. They're not going to make sure that we're using the same testing cycle threshold. They're not going to make sure that we have some kind of general guideline to what kind of mask. Seriously? Are we that stupid? This is the worst pandemic in a century and we're all going to die unless you do this one thing, but we're going to let everything else just kind of be flimsy all over the place and, you know, just fly by the seat of your pants based on what side of the party you're on and what government you're in and where you live and how hot. Really? Come on. That's just outrageous to think that makes sense. Obviously, these things were left up in the air, so it was impossible to follow. Sure, that's my opinion, but ask yourself why in the world they would take things like Event 201, Crimson Contagion, and every single time these exercises told them what they should have done, and every single time it said the things they didn't do this time or before. So they're either the most incompetent, ignorant people on the planet that do exercises and write things down and then go, what did we say? What were we supposed to do? Or they do this to plant narratives in your mind and then don't follow them. So they can point back and go, well, now we know what to do next time. Crazy. But here's what it says. Businesses, employers, and universities are taking the data into their own hands and requiring booster coronavirus shots. Because that's totally legal, right? Business is just going, well, now tomorrow we think that the HPV vaccine, that's now you have to take it because we think it's right. Well, that's the same thing, isn't it? How about a vaccine for some random obscure thing you've never heard of? Are they allowed to do that? Well, of course not, right? But so why would they be allowed to do this? Well, that's because it's under the cover of the pandemic. Just like everything else we told you, they can be like, well, fear, danger. Government said this is danger, so we can force a thing that we all know was never okay before. Like, even from a government level. Remember when Nancy Pelosi's like, we can't force things on you? Right? Well, she said that, and now they're doing that. So, I mean, this is, you have to ask yourself, is this because there it is. Is this because, oh no, that's, I guess I don't have it. No, who cares? If she can stand up and say that we can't force this on you in the beginning, and now we're watching it happen, is that because she was wrong? She was lying? I mean, again, it's your choice, but it's obvious that that's because they wanted to calm your nerves. And at some level, they were thinking, well, we might do it. Probably at some level, they were thinking, we're going to do it soon. We don't know when. So we're at a point now where businesses, remember, who in the beginning of this, we were arguing that this was a violation of HIPAA and this and that. And they said, no, that doesn't count because we're not, it's not businesses doing it, it's hospitals. Well, okay, well, here we are. Now we've got businesses doing it. And now that conversation doesn't matter anymore. Does it matter that we have rights or that we have medical freedom or medical privacy? Of course it doesn't matter because that was never something that mattered to them. This is called the boiling frog, the totalitarian tiptoe, right? It's something that Jordan Peterson talked about in the past. And this is about incremental increase, slowly, right? One small step at a time until you don't realize how far you've come. It's a very important thing to understand. I wonder if this was it. I had a clip of this.
I just don't understand how it gets to the point where...
Yeah, here it is. Let me try to grab this for you real quick. My brother sent this to me.
I just don't understand how it gets to the point where...
things get...
I could just play the audio for you if I can't grab it, but let me try to download this really quickly. There we go. And we actually just talking about this in general, about how it's kind of sad what happened to Jordan Peterson, about how, you know, just something strange went down. And I'm not going to get into that today, but how he's just, you know, he struggled to get back to his old self. Let's see. There we go.
I just don't understand how it gets to the point
where...
Well,
things get to terrible places one tiny step at a time. You know, if I encroach on you and I'm sophisticated about it, I'm going to encroach 2 millimeters. I'm going to encroach right to the point where you start to protest. Then I'm going to stop. Then I'm going to wait. Then you're going to calm down. Then I'm going to encroach again right to the point where you protest. Then I'm going to stop. Then I'm going to wait. And I'm just going to do that forever. And before you know it, you're going to be back 3 miles from where you started, and you'll have done it one step at a time. And then you'll go, oh, how'd I get here? And the answer was, well, I pushed you a little farther than you should have gone, and you agreed. And so then I pushed you a little farther than you should have gone again, and you agreed. And if anybody's interested in this sort of process, and this is a horrifying book, if you want to read about how this process works, you can read a book called Ordinary Men by Robert Browning.
And it's exactly the point. James Corbett's talked about this a lot. Plenty of us have talked about this. This is the concept, right? It's about slow incremental steps that you accept because you don't want to look like the un-American one, or you don't want to look like you're racist, or you don't want to look like whatever the narrative and the push behind it is. And here we are. 15 days turns into 2 years. Forced mask mandates, forced injections, lockdowns, climate change passports. I mean, this is all going forward. I mean, it's that clear. We need to realize this is one of those incremental steps. Now they are basically allowing local businesses and employers and universities to decide for themselves what they'll force on you. Now, that won't be allowed, by the way, if it was in some other context. They couldn't just up until tomorrow decide, well, we're going to force you to take. I'm trying to think of some random vaccine out there that no one's even heard of. Because people would protest and then people would say, well, that's not okay. And they wouldn't have the momentum of the pandemic behind them and the irrational fear that they're pushing into people's minds. But it will be okay once they set the precedent for the next pandemic. Then it will be pushed. This is wrong, illegal in every possible way. There's no legal groundwork for why a business or an employer or a university can decide to implement their own mandates for injections, for medical injections. Now, it says why it matters. Three shots work better than two. False. At preventing infection. Not really, though. Right. So three shots clearly doesn't. If it's four times less effective than what we were dealing with before, that by definition then makes it four times less better effective at preventing infection. Come on, guys. And by the way, she literally just says that it does not stop transmission. They're just toeing the line, guys. This is what I keep showing you, that we're on the cutting edge of the information, as a lot of the independent media is. But here we are where she's admitting to you that it doesn't stop transmission. Right? So Axios here, I guess, hasn't got the memo. And they won't know until other mainstream reports that we're allowed to say that they're saying this. Or it gets mass adoption. I don't know, however you see it. But here they are still going back from 6 months ago. Especially against the Omicron variant. Nope. In fact, it's been shown dramatically lower. That's what we're talking about. But competing definitions of fully vaccinated based on where you live or work will inevitably confuse people. Right, because that makes sense. You know how easy it would be for the government of the federal government to be like, this is the fully... And then you would even argue that there'd be local governments that would say, we disagree, but at least there would be some kind of statement. Now, I'm not arguing that's what we want or should happen. I don't think they should be there at all, to be quite honest. I've said that many times. I don't believe in government in general. But what I'm saying is that if they did that, then that would remove all of the confusion, wouldn't it? It'd be that simple. So why do they let this go forward? Because they want this to be confusing. Because then they can play with the fully vaccinated definition. Driving the news, booster requirements are steadily rolling out across the country, even though the federal definition of fully vaccinated hasn't yet changed. So they're making up their own rules on their own, just deciding that we're going to just make this happen. That's how broken and off the rails this is. I mean, just again, just take a step back from COVID clown world. Go back to 2010 and ask yourself if it would have made sense to you that a business, let's just say Netflix or whatever, just decide, you know what, we're going to force our employees to take this shot. That's it. Would you be like, that makes sense? Because they have good reason. Here's their explanation, and that makes sense. No, nobody anywhere ever would have been like, yep, that makes sense. So why does this make sense now? Because of fear. COVID updates, Moderna and Pfizer boosters are likely to offer substantial protection from Omicron, Fauci says. Well, here we are, them going, absolutely works better and definitely helps you. Fauci said, likely. You know what that means? I don't know. As I said, if I told you that if you took this injection, you likely wouldn't die, would you take it? Obviously not. Because likely means, say it with me now, Fauci, I don't know. Plus, there's no reason to assume the same shot will do anything different. And somebody responded, making an obvious point that we'll then go into some more of the vaccinated problems here. Super likely, look, the vax is working very well. Some exceptions may apply. The manufacturer cannot be held liable. It's funny. Well, here's what is being, you'll find this everywhere right now. And even crazier, they'll follow it up with a thing going, get vaccinated because that's our only savior. A friend was at a small party last weekend, 11 people. Everyone had negative tests, all vaxxed, including the third booster. Again, same point. Clearly, that's not the savior they want you to think it is. All windows open, one person tested, 2 days later, positive, right? So they're all they all have tests before, they're all triple boosted, nobody unvaccinated at the party. Two days later, one person's already testing positive. Now another 7 of the 11 have tested positive, including her boosted friend. Plus 2 out of the remaining 3 have symptoms waiting for a PCR test. That's all but one. In a fully vaccinated crowd, all tested. Seriously? This is being ignored on a mass scale. Here's France, who has officially, as the tweet says, set a new high in cases. 4.5 months into vaccine passports. 19 months into their mask mandates, with 92% of adults at least partially vaccinated. But at least politicians and experts are still pretending vaccine passports and mask mandates can slow the spread, right? It's never been more clear than right now. And this is why they're so aggressively trying to get the unvaccinated part of the control out of the study that's your real world experience right now. What this shows you, first of all, the orange line is people at least one dose, over 90%. Look at how long ago mask mandates were put in place. And after the mask mandates is when you see these huge spikes. And as well as that, you see the vaccine passport, same thing. An aggressive spike and then a random drop, which I think clearly has to do with if you're under believing parts of their narrative, the Omicron part of it, right? Where that was very clearly not dangerous. And that just, but then of course the passports and the vaccines continued to be pushed because of Omicron and because of the passports. And then we see a huge spike in problems. Why? In my opinion, because of the injection. Now, look, you could disagree with me, but then please explain for me how pretty much every single location with the high vaccination rate sees the correlating spike. You can't just keep pointing to the next discovered claimed variant to justify what's happening currently because the timelines don't add up. What does is every one of these locations, some of the four of the five highest transmitting locations in the U.S. are the highest vaccinated in this country. And I think it was three of the lowest transmitting or some of the lowest vaccinated in the country. Nobody wants to talk about that outside of the independent media. Now here, Manchester United versus Brighton Premier League. Fixture postponed amid COVID outbreak. Again, we have a massively high vaccinated entity. Remember, all these people are being forced to be vaccinated. That's what we're seeing people drop in the middle of these games. Okay. So explain for me why there's a massive outbreak, right? I mean, this is everywhere. But here's the most upsetting part. Manchester United and Brighton. Harry Maguire backs the Suns, jabs army, and calls on you to volunteer. England and Manchester United. Ace Harry Maguire urges Brits to join, and then we see this happen. Pretty interesting to see those follow-ups, right? And then, of course, Javad goes, excellent! He's absolutely right! The Jabs Army, which is so crazy alarming, have been vital in the phenomenal rollout. Getting your booster has never been more important. Right, they just keep looking at this, right? As they all have an outbreak. But yeah, keep getting your booster that doesn't work, that continues to have a problem. Right? That they're having outbreaks with all the people that are triple vaccinated. It's insulting to your intelligence, guys. It really is. Now, here is Germany's new chancellor, Olaf Scholz. We won't tolerate extremist anti-vaxxers. This is where we keep telling you this is going to shift to. And they've already made many steps in this direction. It's going to get worse. These people are what's the right word for it? It's almost evangelical. Like these people are like obsessively like this is a cult. They believe this is what he's about to say right here is basically framing anybody anywhere. Remember, they've already said that if you just agree with somebody else not getting vaccinated, that you're also an anti-vaxxer. So anybody who just doesn't agree with passports, forced vaccinations, even who have two shots already are in his mind, extremist anti-vaxxers. Remember, there's a huge portion of people that just got pushed into that category because they don't want their third shot. They're extremists in this person's mind.
We will oppose this tiny minority of haters who attack us all with torchlit marches, violence, and death threats.
Oh, okay, so people protesting. Attacking us all with their protests. Right. Or how about we just point out that there are people that are giving death threats anywhere, all the time. About anything. Happens all the time. Especially with politics. But then they only really point at it when they want to use that. They get death threats all the time. You can look this stuff up. But now he's going to point that certain death threats aimed at them about the vaccine or whatever else, and then just without any evidence, just broadly lay that over anybody anywhere that doesn't want the injection, because that's intelligent, right? That's what this is the Chancellor of Germany doing that. These people are manipulators, guys. There's an agenda, and it's clearly being laid on you whether you like it or not. People who are openly pro-vaccine that don't want these things for whatever reason, they're extremist anti-vaxxers. This is alarming. This is Red Scare type stuff, 1984 type stuff. This is way, way farther than we thought. Well, I shouldn't say that. I think a lot of us saw this coming, but this is so much farther than they ever pretended that they were, right? I mean, this is what they always were, in my opinion.
This tiny minority of haters who attack us all with torchlit marches, violence, and death threats. With all the means of our democratic constitutional state, our democracy is a robust democracy.
Oh, great. So our democracy relies on suppressing the rights of its citizens. Cool. Democracy! Yay!
Michaela, does this signal a more hardline approach towards anti-vaxxers?
Absolutely.
I mean, again, even just the repeated use of that term as a broad concept, right? I mean, this isn't about a race, but the same exact concept in a racial setting is racism, right? These people are clownish. They're hypocrites, right? Like they're cartoonish cartoons of themselves, right? It's like they have no sense of themselves. They don't understand, or even they do and don't care, that what they're doing is literally the opposite of what they're always arguing is what we should be doing. They know this. Looks like we're losing our stream. Let me finish this clip in hopes that it comes back.
This is a change of gear. Clearly, this signals that the days where the government, regional governments, tried to integrate those dissenting voices would be over. He said that there simply was not a split in German society, that this was a very small minority of people who take an extreme approach on this. And
okay, so here's the point. He's saying, well, originally people wanted to fold in the other side of the argument. Right. Like actually have a conversation. No, that's crazy anti-vaxxer stuff. You shouldn't research. You shouldn't have a debate. You have the answer and they're wrong. End of story. That's democracy. Right. This is how ridiculous this is today. Like she's literally saying that we decided not to include the other side of the argument because that's only because the leader says, without any evidence to back it up, that nobody thinks that way. That's only a small minority. Trust me, I'm saying it. That means it's real. So shut down that side of the conversation and we're going to force these extremists out of our. Yeah. This is exactly where we're going everywhere else. Australia, New Zealand, Germany, they're going way over the top. And the U.S. government is leading this charge with Israel. And I think the other groupings, UK, and the ones that are driving this agenda. But it's all being driven by the international aspect. I genuinely believe that. I think the U.S. government is simply a tool in this as well, to be quite honest, or rather a leading arm in what's happening, but nonetheless being led by people like the World Economic Forum. Working with United Arab Emirates and the WHO and Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And if you think that sounds ridiculous, it's openly happening. That's what's so silly about that. I didn't say anything right there that wasn't literally proven on documentation that they put out. It's openly happening. They say it's for your safety, for your freedom, but you can't call it fake news, but they do anyway.
That the state would act against those who try and intimidate politicians. We've just seen death threats against and actually the police moving into us, doing some searches this morning because of a death threat against the state premier of Saxony, Kretschmer, there. So it's an end to the patience by the government. This is a gradual shift towards less understanding for those who refuse to accept facts. Because of a death threat
for those who refuse to accept facts. You love that framing? So pretty much the fact is what they say it is. And if you don't go along with what they say, then now you're an extremist anti-vaxxer. Exactly what we keep telling you. But this is the plan. This is the transition from your choice becoming violence. You deciding to make up your own mind medically becomes you're attacking people. Now, of course, it starts with them saying those anti-vaxxers are threatening got violence against the government. And then it becomes a bill that lays something out that becomes abstractly applied to anybody anywhere who has that stance. Oh, you said something on Twitter about not wanting to go along with this and how they're doing things that violate your rights? Or how about just even more extreme? And you point out that the government are criminals. Uh-oh, that's getting a little contentious. Now you're attacking them. Now you're in trouble, right? This is where this is going. And I even believe that they know that. That want to call us conspiracy theorists, they just can't wait to get there. I can't wait for them to be thrown in jail. That's how these people have been brought. This is fascism. It's authoritarianism. This is totalitarian government stuff. Good luck, Germany. Time to stand up. I think they're already doing it. But here's the funny part is as we're staring at all the rest of this, right? The UK, specifically the UK data that shows you that the majority of everything that's happening there is on the vaccinated side. All of it. Deaths, hospitalizations, cases, everything. And yet here's what the report on this one article says. And this is everywhere today. This is the Evening Standard. UK's first Omicron death was, quote, unvaccinated conspiracy theorist. So what does that actually mean? Let's just say for sake of conversation, that's exactly what happened. You know, ignoring for the fact that this person could have had one shot and they would still call him unvaccinated. What does that even mean? It's the same thing as saying this person died and then on their deathbed said, gosh, I wish I would have gotten an injection. That is the most meaningless story of all time. It is emotional manipulation on either side of it. You could say it was somebody who got the vaccine who died saying, gosh, I wish I wouldn't have taken it. It's just as meaningless. It is a person's emotional opinion on one setting. It has nothing to do with the larger conversation. That's why we look at the data we can prove. This is about them making their argument with one person. That guy just died and he was unvaccinated. Therefore, you're all crazy. Well, that doesn't mean anything when you look at the fact that the majority of people who are dying are people who are vaccinated. So you see what happens when you add context to the one you plucked out of there, even if they might not even be unvaccinated, right? It's just, it's so frustrating. And this is the even crazier part. This is everywhere, by the way. This is all over mainstream media. And guess where it comes from? A man giving his name only as John made this claim after phoning in to a radio show. Unverified. Not even giving his last name, makes an argument on a call, hangs up, and then boom, it's everywhere in the mainstream media. Because we know? I mean, for crying out loud. I mean, even if they did end up going on and proving it, this is the kind of thing that is the exactly what they would just call out every which way if it was an independent media person doing it. They are. They're cartoons of themselves. It's ridiculous today. But again, here's what's actually happening. Well, they scream about the one person they claim was unvaccinated, who, for all we know, died from something completely different that they named Omicron. That's another way to look at that too, right? PCR test, that's how they're doing this. How do they know it was Omicron? Because they're telling you that because they want you to think Omicron is there. That's their estimation. It takes genetic sequencing to find out, which takes at least 48 hours. The UK and the US are some of the lowest in the world. A fraction of 1% the U.S. government has actually genetically sequenced. Yet somehow they're managing to tell you that the majority of Omicron or the majority of Delta. How do they know? They don't. Their own documentation proves this. They take samples and they give you an estimate, but they don't tell you that. I've proven this left and right. That's why they hate me. But how do they know? Well, because this suits a narrative. But again, here's what's actually happening. Now, we already actually reported part of the story to you. Social credit part of the story. But you'll see as we go through. In South Korea, it has successfully contained COVID-19 throughout much of the pandemic, they say, and it now has one of the highest vaccination rates among wealthy countries. But historic levels of infections, hospitalizations, and deaths, all three of them, are prompting the country to reverse plans to reopen and instead take some of the most aggressive measures against the virus of any country in the world. Fully vaccinated, with boosters being administered. And it's not just cases, it's infections, hospitalizations, and deaths. Historic levels. How does that even make sense with the, you have the highest, one of the highest vaccination rates, and now you're, and you have higher problems now than ever before? Well, the only way that makes sense in my mind, I'm sure there's some other argument you could make, is that the vaccine, yet again, correlates with the increase in problems, that they name other things. You're having hospitalizations and deaths that are being caused by other problems that are being triggered by the injection, whether it's comorbidities you already had, whether it's spike proteins causing strokes and heart attacks and everything else, or any number of other things we've already gone over. Doubling of heart problems just because of the injection itself. I mean, for crying out loud, there's 1,000 reasons this could be anything, but the bottom line is it clearly shows you that the vaccines they're giving are not having the effect they claim. Pretty easy to see. In recent days, health officials accelerated the timetable for adults to get a booster shot down to 3 months. What do you know? From a prior wait of 5 months. Where's that 3 months keep popping up? Isn't that strange? Well, it's not because you have been primed to see that, as I've been telling you from the beginning. It's not hard to see that this has been something that's been there for a long time. I believe I still have it up. I mean, you guys are, oh, here it is. It's just funny how, you remember when I pulled this up the first time? And remember, there was at least two other sites that had the same thing. And this is the St. Louis County website. And it was talking about a quarantine order, isolation order, which, by the way, in and of itself is really alarming. I did a whole show on this. But the point for today is how on that documentation, they let something slip earlier than they should have. And what was that? The definition of fully vaccinated. Now, here it goes into the 14 days after and two doses. Now, of course, we're folding in a third shot to that nonsense. But here was the main point. After the first part of it, where one shot in 14 days, two shot in 14 days, it says additionally, after 3 months from the dose, a person is no longer considered fully vaccinated. Now, we made a big point about that. Then they rushed to delete it. It's not there anymore. All of them went down like the same day. That's not by coincidence. I was only able to archive the one. If you guys find more, please send it to me. Now, the point is, this is showing you what we've all continued to find. All of it, from Israel to the UK, they're all getting back to this three-month discussion. And why? Do you remember that long ago? Because the Israeli information showed you that after 3 months, it basically drops off to nothing. So they have known. There's no reason that would come out like that and then be pulled back if there wasn't some already foreknowledge here. That's my opinion. But going forward, now they're putting it down to three. So now in South Korea, every 3 months, booster time. Right? Why would they talk about down to 3 months for the booster if there weren't going to be more after that? Because most of these people have gotten these things a long time ago. Now it says teens now must get vaccinated by February or face penalties. The least at-risk group. One in a million chance, according to Oxford, of dying. And here we're going to force them to take the injection. That's clearly increasing their risk and that they don't need. Starting next month, one South Korean city will use facial recognition technology, and this is what we already reported, to automate contact tracing as a way to speed up investigations. Now, wouldn't you love to get an insight into that computer system and realize that everyone they're tracing is vaccinated? Now, we'll never show you that. Most businesses will soon have to close by 9 p.m. because that makes no sense at all, right? Because at 9:01 is when the virus comes out, right? Goes on to say, some 81.5% of South Korea's 52 million residents are fully vaccinated. By contrast, the vaccination rates stand at 61% in the U.S., 69% in the U.K. Anybody want to explain that? Right? Why aren't the U.S. and the U.K. in the same or worse situations? Wouldn't that make sense if their narrative was all sound? Don't even try to add these things up. That's why they want things to be different tests over there, different tests here, different levels here. They'll decide for themselves because you don't make, they can, you can always just argue, well, there's caveats here. What that shows you, if their narrative is what they tell you it is, that we should be in the same situation. Now, here's the discussion I go over in regard to the COVID social credit system is here. This is the first one. The show after that, I followed up on that as well. But here is the point about the safety that we keep making. Javad says, the 15-minute observation period after you get your injection will now be suspended. This is not a joke. Following clinical advice? What could that have possibly been? That it's safer not to monitor people? And here's the point. We're doing everything we can to safely speed up our booster program and get more jabs in arms. Are you serious? This is disgusting. As I said, I keep pointing this out. They're saying they will ignore safety measures, which is what that is. It's a safety measure to monitor you in case something happens to you. They're going to ignore safety measures for your safety. That is the dumbest thing, and that has been a constant throughout this pandemic. We're going to rush the vaccines for your safety. We're gonna force you into lockdowns and force you to wear masks for your safety. All of this stuff, it's not safe and has been very clearly shown over time. Now it says, I said, not a joke, as that's literally their argument when it's boiled down, that they must remove safety monitoring to hurry up the jabs because they apparently keep you safe. How does anybody honestly see this and go, that makes sense? Yeah, I looked at this. There's nothing really in here. It just simply goes over the same points. And it says, this is in light of the need to speed up vaccination. So how can they argue safely? How can he literally say that we're doing everything we can to safely speed these up? How is it even, is there some kind of counterbalance? You're not safely speeding up anything. You're just speeding it up. You're removing safety. So in fact, you're dangerously speeding it up. You're adding risk because the argument is that if we don't speed it up, there's more risk if we don't. And that's what their general argument is. I just literally can't believe this is what's happening. What we're going to see here is even more things not be reported. So they're probably going to point to a drop in VAERS reports as proof it's getting better, even though all you're doing is removing people. You're going to have people who immediately drive home. What happens to people that pass out? You're going to drive home and we're going to see an increase in the vaccinants that we keep pointing out. Vaccine accidents, people driving home, getting in car accidents. People pass out days later. Chelsea Handel lost one of her eye and hearing while she was driving like a week later. This is ridiculous. These people are criminals and they are actively putting people at risk. I don't know if you want to look at this as the fact that they want to hide what's happening afterward or they just want to see more. I don't know. I can't even wrap my mind around how this makes sense, even from their narrative, other than to, as fast as possible, get this in people's arms so we can hide what's going on. Even though I don't even think that's how it's going to work out. And RFK Jr. is pointing out that, and we've just been discussing this since the conversation came up. Health officials and vaccine makers call for boosters after studies show Pfizer's vaccine is less effective against Omicron. And we already told you that. But data on breakthrough cases suggests the vaccine hasn't been effective against either of the strains. Yep. That's what we keep telling you guys. The data has always been clear. These things aren't stopping transmission. They're not effective, regardless of anything you point to. They just keep saying that. Now they're just making Omicron the excuse, even though Delta, they admitted the same thing. Walensky was on TV admitting Delta wasn't stopping transmission. So it's really weird that she would say now they don't. Like, she really doesn't think you're smart enough to look back like a few months? Well, on top of all of that, here's what the bot campaigns are saying. And you know these are everywhere. Same exact tweet all over the place. I'm fully vaccinated and I have my booster. No, I don't know what's in it. Neither this vaccine or the ones I had as a child. Well, that makes you an idiot. Nor do I know what's in the 11 secret herbs and spices at KFC. This is supposed to be an intelligent tweet, like a snarky tweet that shows how dumb you are. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. And it's wildly ignorant of their own informed consent. Here it is. I mean, it's all over the place, guys. Basically the exact same tweet. So even if they alter a little bit, realize there are people that are just... look at this one. It's got 120,000 likes, 22,000 shares. Andrew Shuttleworth. These people are either bots or they're being told what to say. It's everywhere. Now, to acknowledge the ignorance of this. So you're acknowledging that you don't know what's in this thing. So that means that you're admitting off, without saying it, that you're blindly trusting the government. Right? So the government says you should do this. And you go, okay. And then we're dumb for not blindly trusting a group that's been overtly lying to us for our entire lives, or a pharmaceutical company that's been caught lying about this exact situation and paid billions of dollars in fines. Yeah, you're an idiot if you think that. Neither this vaccine nor the ones I had a child. Well, nobody knows what's in the child ones because you were a child when you got them. Your parents should have known because that's their obligation. But to compare that we don't know what's in KFC spices and act like that's the same thing is just the stupidest argument I can possibly imagine. You're talking about spices and seasonings. And you know what? If you were worried there was something dangerous in there, would you just eat the chicken anyway? The point is that we don't know what's in this thing, and there's clear reason to be concerned about it. And all you can do is compare it to eating chicken. And we're the dangerous ones. But again, I don't think this is people. In some cases, people might copy it and share it. But look at how this is everywhere. This is either your government or people in political positions actively trying to influence things without facts. Just trying to influence your emotional opinion. This is everywhere. And this is controlling the flow of stuff in the two-party paradigm. Now, here's somebody who might have actually cared what was in this thing, but he was forced to take it anyway. Barcelona star Sergio Aguero burst into tears as he confirms retirement from football due to a heart condition. That's right. Everywhere.
I've decided to stop playing professional football. It's a very difficult moment. So the decision that I made, I've taken it for my health. That's the main reason I've made this decision. Because of the problem that I had a month and a half ago.
Now, you can look more into this. The bottom line here, guys, is this, again, it's like all the rest of the points. I'm not trying to stand here like the mainstream media does every single day, like the point we just made, where they censor people for myocarditis claims, even though there's no possible way they could know for sure. I'm not going to stand here and tell you that I could know for sure that this is caused by the vaccine, because we're honest. But at the end of the day, it's the larger picture. It's the fact that there is an undeniable amount of this happening way above the normal amount. And I keep citing the 20-year NIH study. 20-year NIH study around cardiac events in athletes, 1.46 per 100,000 per year. That's the number. We are way, I did two shows on this. We are way past that. Footballers are standing up. Commentators are standing up. People are very aware of what's happening. And we're not even talking about the childhood version of this, because I talked about that in the first coverage I did. Now, obviously, the larger pickup has been on the athletes. It's bigger, more obvious, but it's just the same problem in children athletes that nobody's focusing on. And nobody cares. We're all conspiracy theorists for even offering up the possibility. Breaks my heart to see stuff like this. Now, somebody made a really good point in the comments. He said, just thought of one professional athletic organization not canceling events for 30 plus people in the event, all having COVID at the same time and not having athletes die of cardiac events. The UFC. Think about that. And he said, gee, I wonder what they are or aren't doing that soccer football teams aren't or are. You know the answer to that, because he very publicly stood up and bucked the whole thing. I'm not going to force him to do it, he said. I'm blanking on his name all of a sudden, the leader of the UFC, the shaved head guy, I forget his name. But nonetheless, the point is, isn't that an obvious stark contrast? This is the control versus the other part. That's why they're so, the unvaccinated of the world are the control right now. And they are a beacon for why this thing is not working, and they're desperate to get rid of that. Here is another one. Maybe I've missed it, but I have not seen a single person in the UFC have this problem. I have not seen a single person have any outbreak. The UFC has not had a problem, unless I've missed it. Somebody, Dana White, thank you. Somebody please show me this. But this is an excellent point, isn't it? One of the only groups that bucks the entire vaccine program weirdly doesn't have the problems. How many more examples do we need? Now, on the note of bucking this push, and rightly so, because of the alarming things that are possible in what the government's capable of and what they're doing and where this seems to be going forward. This article scared me a little bit because of where I've been telling you this is going. Now, I want to go over this article today and just the surface points of this, but I have an entire segment, a huge segment that I pushed off today because this was already going to be way too long, but I'm going to come back to this exact topic. And passports and nanotechnology and the whole tie-in with a really deep discussion about things we've already talked about and things we're going forward with, new information. Probably the very next show I do. I think I already said that today. But this is something I had to get out today. This came out yesterday or 2 days ago. Needle-free, air-powered COVID vaccine trial begins in the UK. Now, discussions of powdered vaccines, like powder, is also in this discussion. But it starts with air powered. So essentially, it's not a needle. It's powered by air. So the reason this first was like, whoa, this is crazy, because I'm like, well, what does that exactly mean? And how can that be applied in a large scale? Is there a way this could be used? Because that's always how their minds are going. As we get into the conversation I'm going to have in a future show, it's all centered around the universal vaccine, both for flu and for COVID. And that's always been happening. I did a huge topic about this before, right when this started, about how I don't know if it was Gottlieb, I forget who it was, but previous to this, they had been aggressively trying to make the universal flu vaccine and failed, and mRNA was in the mix and all this stuff. And then COVID came and it all worked. Or did it? But nonetheless, they're trying to jam all these things together into one thing. Your universal thing you take every 6 months, every 3 months, whatever they want to give you. Don't need an immune system, just take your next three shots or whatever it is. That's what they're going toward. So we can see this and how that could be applied in a massive scale. We've talked about the self-spreading vaccines. Which again, it's so funny how this is, conspiracy theory. Johns Hopkins put out their own documentation about how that was the future of vaccines. There's 1,000 studies, peer-reviewed and otherwise, openly discussing the concept of self-spreading vaccines, both in the context of animals, as well as how they could be used in humans. Very clear. There are multiple shows on this. So this made me think about how that could be applied in that way. Here's what it says. Scientists at the University of Cambridge on Tuesday began a clinical trial of a needle-free air-powered vaccine, which is expected to help combat future variants. Now, I don't understand how, I feel like everybody in this field right now is just arguing that what they're doing will help combat the new variant. This is just another vaccine. I don't understand why it's arguing here's how I should say it. The way they're selling this is that this is the big thing. Oh, air-powered, it's so the new, well, that's not really what I think this is about. This is about sneaking in behind that, the universal concept. And then you'll see when you get to the powdered concept and how I think this is applied in a much larger, more alarming way. But when it says it's expected to help combat the future variants, doesn't, I don't think it has anything to do with the administration, the air-powered administration. I don't know why that in any way would help combat future variants. It's because of what they're doing with the injection, which could be applied to air-powered or not. So you see what I mean? It's a little bit of a couch dart. It's a, that's not the right word. It's like a Trojan horse, if you will. Now, developed by Professor Jonathan Heaney at the University of Cambridge and spin-out company Diosynvax. Now, we're going to get into that in the next coming up show, and the new Diosvax technology, which is what we're talking about, dubbed a next-generation coronavirus vaccine. Now, we're going to play the clip after this that we started with and show you how alarming this is when there's hundreds of other vaccines being worked on right now for the same thing and offers a possible future alternative to people who fear needle-based jabs. They always make that the argument that we're somehow all afraid of needles and that's why we're concerned. It's not, I mean, there are people that are afraid of needles, but we're afraid of what you're doing with these dangerous things. That's what people are afraid of. The intention behind whatever thing you're jamming in people's arms, as history has made very clear, we have every right to be concerned. And it says, if successful, it could be scaled up and manufactured as a powder to boost global vaccination efforts. Now, I'm not sure how you want to take that. I don't know why a powder, unless you're talking about mass distribution and some sort of powder spray, or I don't know why that would somehow increase vaccination. Unless it was a powder that you spray, right? If you're just talking about a powder in vials or in a box or in a bag, you still got to ship them. It's the same exact thing, other than the argument that you have to, that it's easier to store, let's say, which is one of the arguments they make. But there's all sorts of jabs out there, even in coronavirus world, that aren't as that aren't sub-zero temperatures. So it's interesting to me that this is the way they frame this. I think the idea of a powdered vaccine is the most alarming thing, save for the nanotechnology step, which you could discuss in the same vein. Is there nanotechnology involved in this? Is that what's in this powder? I mean, these are valid questions based on the way that they're pushing this forward. I mean, actually, just one thing that I might pull from what we'll talk about come in the coming show is this article, where they make the case that this should be, if it was going to happen, secret. Now, I wasn't even going to get into this conversation today, but I'm just going to quickly point to this, just to give you a little taste of where we're going to possibly go. But this is an article from August 2018. Compulsory moral bioenhancement should be covert. And it simply says that some people argue that this enhancement, bioenhancement, again, that they're openly discussing, right? That this is an open conversation about this, wherever that was, that we've talked about many times. Converging Technologies for Improving Human Performance, 2002. This is where they argue they're going to alter human evolution in 20 years. Puts you exactly in track with where we are right now. They talk about using nanotechnology, biotechnology, information, cognitive, and putting it all together. Remember when Klaus Schwab brings this up and says that this is how we're going to do this, we're going to change your future?
What the fourth industrial revolution will lead to is a fusion of our physical, our digital, and our biological identities.
Yep. Right. And he says you're in the fourth industrial revolution right now. So 20 years ago, they told you you'd be right here. And they alter human evolution. That's the objective. So here we are, 2018, where they're saying that bioenhancement like that ought to be compulsory. He says, I take this argument one step further, arguing that if moral bioenhancement ought to be compulsory, then its administration ought to be covert rather than overt. Like literally arguing that this is for the public good, so we shouldn't scare people. We should just secretly make this happen. Now, of course, that doesn't mean that they therefore did. But ask yourself that. If this is an open argument on bioethics, this isn't some fringe website. Ask yourself whether that's something that might happen. Like all I'm showing you that part of it for, and we're going to get deep on this in the next show. The only reason I'm showing you that for now is for the casual observer to think that this isn't some fringe concept. It's been an openly discussion from your government for a long time. So now back to the point. If you're going to have a vaccine that's in a powder form, isn't it possible this is something that could be used in a way that is not really your choice? They're openly talking about self-spreading vaccines. Johns Hopkins said that's the future of vaccines. And of course, that removes the concept of informed consent because you don't have a choice. So the powder could just be another vein in that same conversation. And what's even crazier, you guys all know, is there's people still watching, oh, fake news, because I didn't prove the cell-spreading part, even though I can't pull up everything all simultaneously. But the nanotechnology aspect of that needs to be considered. Future alternatives to people who fear needles can be scaled up and manufactured as a powder to boost global vaccination efforts. That's alarming to me. Going forward, the response of the scientific and medical communities to the development and delivery of COVID-19 vaccines has been incredible, they say. But as new variants emerge and immunity begins to wane, we need newer technologies. Now, let me ask you this. Why is newer technology the solution? Or is that just the easily self-serving direction that you already wanted to go? How about we just go, well, why new? How about we go back to things that were working before and just do that? Well, because that's not what we want. We want to use this thing that we're pushing to push you into our direction, which is new things and platforms and mRNA technology and universal vaccines and nanotechnology altering human evolution. That's where we want to go. So we want to create a situation that justifies using that new technology because that's the only answer. Problem, reaction, solution. New variants emerge. So instead of making something that's in the past, at least so they say, historically shown to work, you know, just normal vaccine technology to something that's happening, or we just let people get sick and recover like, you know, history has shown us, we're going to jump into newer technologies. Of course, and that makes sense to rush into something unproven in the middle of a pandemic, right? Like, it's just amazing how they keep just, this is the same push. Rushing out mRNA technology rapidly with multiple, just few months study and arguing that makes sense because we're all in danger. We're going to do it again. Apparently, new variants, new technology, rush into it. I think this is a stone. This is jumping from stone to stone, as I keep saying. They want you to jump to the next stone before you even establish that you're steady on the first one. They want to jump and jump and jump until you're way down the line. And before you, that, just like Jordan Peterson pointed out, it's vital, they say, that we continue to develop new generation vaccine candidates ready to help keep us safe from the next virus threats. Why do they have to be new generation? Especially since clearly, even those of you that got it have to acknowledge that this has not been proven. This has not been proven to be the new miracle they all wanted to sell it to you as. It says our vaccine is innovative, both in terms of the way it primes the immune system to respond with a broader protective response to coronaviruses. You see, it's not the error administration. It's the thing they're making, which is a universal, they claim, and how it is delivered. As, you know, respectively, two separate things. Crucially, it is the first step towards a universal coronavirus vaccine that we are developing, protecting us not just from COVID-19 variants, but from future coronaviruses. Ah, okay. Well, we don't need that though, right? Seeing as how that's already happening. Ultra potent antibodies against diverse and highly transmissible SARS-CoV-2 variants. I believe this down here makes it even clearer. Where it says, our study demonstrates that convalescent subjects, people who got sick before, most of these were 2020, previously infected with the original strain, produced antibodies that cross-neutralize emerging variants of concern with high potency. That's pretty damn clear. And it seems to suggest that going forward, they will continue to, because this goes all the way up to Delta. Now, I should add, and I had pulled this off as well. Let me see where I grabbed that. Here we go. I should add that I reached out to Dr. Malone on Twitter to ask his opinion about this. And I'll include this. Oh, that's the wrong one. One second. Or maybe I lost it. Well, anyway, I wanted to include that because that's important for you guys to research. And myself, because I'm going to look into it further. Dr. Malone posted... No, that's weird. Dang it. Well, I'll add it to the show notes if I can remember, if I can find it. But the reason I want to include it is because I asked him on Twitter and I said, what do you think of this? Because he posted a new study that suggests that that your natural immunity won't work against Omicron. And I haven't had the time to dive into it extensively. I'm going to probably do that on the next show as well, because this is an important conversation. But I asked him, what do you think of this? And the other one I just showed you that suggests that the T cell immunity is very clearly there continually for natural immunity. And he simply just said that the data, the new information suggests otherwise. And the data is king. So you could, there's valid points to be made there. I have to look into that before I make my opinion on it. But this seems pretty strongly to suggest that this is what will continue to happen. But Dr. Malone is obviously more educated on these topics than me. The point, nonetheless, is that there's data that shows that you've continued to have neutralizing effects to variants of concern, but that's never been the case in regard to the vaccine. And I've said that from the very beginning. But so when they say that you're going to make something that does that, it's just kind of insulting to realize that you've already been having that the entire time with natural immunity, and their injections have been removing those antibodies and everything else from your body, as multiple things have shown. But it says the COVID-19 SARS-CoV-2 virus uses spike proteins on its surface to gain entry into the host cells. These proteins bind ACE2, a protein receptor on the surface of cells in our airways, allowing the virus to release its genetic material into the host cell. The virus hijacks the host cell's machinery to allow itself to replicate and spread. Now, it says vaccines inform our bodies about what dangerous infections look like and how to respond to them. This is much safer than becoming infected with the live virus because it avoids life-threatening effects from the whole virus can have. Except you're ignoring all of the very clearly laid out issues that are happening after the injection. If you're not going to factor that in, it's not a real risk-benefit analysis. You can't just simply say vaccine good at all costs and that becoming infected is more dangerous because it has risk and this doesn't. There's clearly risk. And if you have a less than 1% risk of dying or even really getting sick for most of these people from COVID-19, then the injection is more dangerous. But they just don't factor that in. Now it says immunization arms our immune system to look out for and block virus or destroy cells that carry the spike protein. Right. Exactly my point. Unfortunately, SARS-CoV-2 is constantly mutating and the virus spike protein itself is changing. Again, exactly what I keep arguing. This raises the prospect of vaccine escape, where changes to the immune spike mean the immune system is no longer able to recognize it. Except we know, at least up to Delta, that this has clearly been happening. That you have continued to make ultra-potent antibodies with natural immunity from day one all the way up until now. So, when they're arguing that it's going to continue to destroy cells that carry the spike protein. And we know, based on the research that we've continued to show, that this is circulating in your bloodstream. 11 of 13 participants showed detectable levels of SARS-CoV-2 protein as early as one day after the vaccine injection in the plasma in their body to some level. So we know it's not just in the arm, as they keep lying to you about. So my point is this circulates your body. Then, as they're arguing, that this seeks out and destroys cells that carry the spike protein. Yeah, so this is happening in people's bodies where their body's attacking their own cells, and that's where we see to some level the problems we're seeing. The science that's been around this, the research around this, has made this very clear. Plenty of experts have called this out. Antibody-dependent enhancement, molecular mimicry, pathogenic priming, this is happening. Then it says it's constantly mutating and the virus spike protein itself is changing. Exactly. So when you make the injections that are tailored towards something that was original one way and it's changed since then, well, shocker, it's not working. It's not working because of that. But they're willing to admit that when they want to prove to you their new thing is going to work, but they're pretending that it's not going to make, they're not going to apply that to what's currently happening. That's just crazy. It says where changes the spike protein mean the immune system is no longer able to recognize it. So if your immune system doesn't recognize it, doesn't mean it's, I mean, there's a lot of hypotheticals you could piece in there, but at the end of the day, doesn't that show you that this is not, what they're telling you is not accurate? And we're also going to, let's see, I'll read these, then I'm going to show you the clip here of where he tells you exactly what's happening. That if you give someone an injection and it's not the right one, it will hurt you. So this is exactly what they're telling you right here. It's changing constantly, and therefore you can't see it. So you're giving them an injection that's not applying to what they're actually fighting, and that's hurting people. It's very clear. Well, and just James Lyons-Weiler has been railing against this lately. Now, it says, while most COVID-19 vaccines use the sequence of the RNA for the virus spike protein from the first isolated samples, even though that's never been shown to actually happen, again, I make the argument that doesn't mean it hasn't happened. It means we haven't seen it. My belief is that it hasn't happened. I'm just simply willing to argue that just because we haven't seen it doesn't mean it hasn't happened. I argue that the reason that might be the case is because maybe that isolation proved something like, for instance, it was a bioweapon. So they want to keep it from your view. I don't know. But I do know that it hasn't been shown to us. The Chinese CDC admitted they didn't isolate it before they sent it to the NIH, and in 2 days they had a vaccine, right? And a week later they were producing vaccines. I mean, it's crazy. And many experts have made this clear case. That they didn't technically isolate it. They didn't meet Koch postulates. I've gone over this many times. Regardless of that, it's saying the spike protein from the first, they claim, isolated samples of COVID virus in January 2020. The new DiosVax technology uses predictive methods predictive methods to encode antigens like the spike protein that mimic a wider family of coronavirus antigens, thus giving wider protection, they assume. Like, here's a concept. How about it works for the first thing you give somebody, and then new things come along, and it doesn't actually work the way you think it should, and now you make it even worse, just like you were talking about, because you're guessing. Predictive methods. Why would we dive headfirst into something that's like this, as opposed to using things historically that have been showing to work? Because they want this to be the future. Now, how about if you thought it might be the future, you flesh it out first. You research it for years and decades and find out if it's there. Then we, yeah, but see, that doesn't matter. They used what's happening to rush in what they want to happen because they're either in a time frame or there's something else driving this. This is an end game, and I can't stop feeling that way. Professor Heaney explains, DOS-COVAX vaccines target elements of the virus structure that are common to all known beta coronaviruses. Those coronaviruses are the greatest disease threats to humans. These are structures that are vitally important to the virus life cycle, which means we can be confident that they are unlikely to change in the future. No, I mean, it's all hypothetical, and I don't know why we would take at face value that they're saying this sounds like something that is the objective. They've been working at this for a long time. They've been failing at this for a long time. I've already talked about this, and now suddenly they're just going to make it work in the middle of a pandemic, because that makes sense. These next-generation DOVAX vaccines should protect us against variants we've seen so far. Should. Alpha, beta, delta variants, for example, and hopefully future-proof us against emerging variants. Hopefully. Either way, I can't predict the future, but I do know that this is guessing on what they want to be the future as opposed to using proven records in the past. But even then, I would argue that's not exactly the case. But nonetheless, it shows you that they are stepping into a direction that they want to be the future. And they're putting your body they're using your body as the test. Now, here is a very important clip that I want people to really. Wait, is that the one? I think that's the one. Let's see. Perfect. Okay. So this is in a lab. I'm just going to jump to the part here. I think it's right here. Right there. Okay. So this is the lab where they're currently working on these universal vaccines right now. Now, just listen carefully to what he says.
Around 170 being developed in the Cambridge vaccines.
That too.
And then from there, we will take it into the clinic.
The Cambridge vaccines, one of around 170 being developed in the world.
170. 170 right now. Yeah, because there's not a big boon here at all, right? Well, we already have a safe and effective, perfectly working vaccine. Why do we need it? Why is that for? Well, they're all working towards the next step, which is going to be the universal thing that works for all of them or whatever they say it does. 100 and however many they just said. 100 plus. Now, that's alarming to me. Aren't there other things that we should be focusing on? Like, this is the point. This is the future. This is the direction. And whether or not it's actually dangerous or actually concerning, it's just simply the next boon. So they're all jumping in and trying to get theirs. That's my opinion, obviously. But I think it's pretty ridiculous to pretend that this is something that makes sense to make while we are jumping. Like right now, this thing's evolving and changing, so we're told, at rapid pace. And yet they're going to make something now that's going to apply going forward forever. I don't know. This all seems like what they want you to think is happening.
Currently,
but here's the point.
The team from Oxford University is the front runner, but we'll need lots of different vaccines to fight this disease.
In case one fails. We don't have time, you know, to wait to advance a second or a third candidate. So it's important to move all of these as far along as possible.
They're trying to train the body's immune system to target the right part of the virus, because getting it wrong can be dangerous.
Okay, they're trying to target the right part of the virus, because getting it wrong can be dangerous. Listen again.
As possible.
They're trying to train the body's immune system to target the right part of the virus.
Trying to train the body's immune system, right? Which clearly has been shown to not work and been bad and dangerous, or rather the fact that, you know, your immune system already knows how to work. So changing this makes it dependent on these changes, which then makes you dependent on the next administration of the shot.
Because getting it wrong can be dangerous.
Dangerous.
We know that historically with coronaviruses, that if you do vaccinate with the wrong kind of vaccine, for instance, in domestic cats who have a similar viral infection, that you can make the disease more severe.
Okay. This is real time. This is today. This they're saying, not necessarily his discussion there, but this video is happening in real time. This is not an old thing. He's telling you again, if you, and specifically coronaviruses, if you give, he says, we know if you give the wrong injection, the wrong vaccine, it can make the virus worse. Now, you could take that a lot of different ways. Is he talking about the variants popping off? Is he talking about the adverse events? Is he talking about any number of things? It does. At the end of the day, guys, he's very clearly telling you what Fauci admitted in that old video, which, by the way, there was a little confusion with that, by the way. That antibody-dependent enhancement video, I guess I was not very clear about that. The whole point was that it was in 2020. It's an old video that we knew, and we've been screaming about since December 2020, in fact. It's that they know this is happening. They know that it's possible. They said this from the beginning. And now while we're watching this break down in front of us, they're refusing to acknowledge that it's there. They're giving an injection that's based on an earlier strain that they admitted has changed in the article of this discussion. Then he goes on to admit that if you do that, that's dangerous and can hurt people. And we can't stand back and go, what did he just tell us? That's actually what's happening right now.
One fails. We don't have time, you know, to wait to advance a second or a third candidate. So it's important to move all of these as far along as possible.
They're trying to train the body's immune system to target the right part of the virus, because getting it wrong can be dangerous.
We know that historically with coronaviruses, that if you do vaccinate with the wrong kind of vaccine, for instance, in domestic cats who have a similar viral infection, that you can make the disease more severe.
One of the biggest issues with vaccines is having to keep it in freezers and inject it quickly, not easy in poorer countries. The Cambridge vaccine can potentially be freeze-dried, making it much easier to store. You also won't need...
Right, so that's the argument, right, for why the powder. But look, even if that's literally the reason they designed it that way for, it doesn't mean it can't still be applied from a military government perspective. They see that and go, oh, perfect. I know exactly what we can use that for, or how we can apply that for a weaponized version, or blah, 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 right? Like, even that itself is probably people going, oh, fake news. Again, if you think that's fake news, then you have no idea what your government has basically publicly done for your entire life. Crazy. But that's why I think that's alarming.
A needle to get it in.
So now the vaccine is in here, and we're ready to administer that to our bicep. 90-degree angle. Make sure that it's close, and then once you're ready, you'll hear a big click, and that essentially means that the vaccine has been administered.
So that's gone into your skin, but without putting a pinprick through it, basically?
There's no needle, and as you can see, there's no hole.
So how's it gone in?
So it's a high-powered jet stream that allows the vaccine to pass through the layer of skin, and then it is inside the human body as you would wish it to be.
This money will pay for phase one trials, where it's given to dozens of healthy volunteers to make sure there are no side effects. But they'll need a lot more money and time to test how well it protects large numbers of people from the virus.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly what wasn't happening with the other injections, right? We're going to take lots of time to make sure this doesn't, but we won't do that for your safety in other cases, you know, but it's weird. The way that that's administered, like, I'm almost skeptical that's even possible. Like, I'm sure that it is, but it's like, you're saying that you take this liquid and break it down somehow into, like, how is it possible that that can shoot in that small vial into your arm with air and not have some kind of blemish or break the skin or something? Very weird to me. It makes me actually question whether that whole thing is some sort of a, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to go too far over the top, but right now what we're seeing to me is a new direction with new technology that's potentially could be used to as a powdered form at a time when we have clearly not even proven that the technology itself, that the mRNA technology before that, which it doesn't even have to be based on, but they said it probably is, has been proven out. Which brings us to the idea of why all of this is being forced. And this is specifically from the Defender. And again, I'm going to talk about this in the next show I will be making about the nanotechnology and where this all goes forward. But this is from the 15th. Digital surveillance, the real motive behind push to vaccinate kids. As this PhD points out, the real purpose behind the historic, unprecedented push to vaccinate the very young, even against diseases like COVID that do not pose a threat to them, is to fold the current generation of children into the blossoming global digital identity system. I wholeheartedly agree with that, at least in part, large part. But we'll get into that more in the next show. It's going to be a good one. There's so much going on there, the technological angle of this. But you can see how this is all being driven in a clear direction. And then a follow-up to the Russia part of that, where we were talking about how they were vetoing the climate change emergency in the UN. Well, here's a point going in the other direction. Russia's state Duma adopts vaccine passports with QR codes. 329-87. Clearly, they're on the wrong track, right? So interesting back and forth. But I think all of these people are in the same direction. Now, speaking of the illusion that is happening and how this is being driven forward, I think, and from everybody's angle, there's an important discussion to be had today, once again, about one of the largest linchpins of this illusion, which is the PCR test. And this is one that we've continued to batter down, and we haven't talked about in a while. But I want to reiterate it again today because something that's coming up in the end of the month. And I want to point back to, this is only from the third, beginning of the month. What is the PCR test? And this is, just so you know, this is, you know, reversed in Israel. So it's 12-3-20. Dr. Thomas Cowan, you cannot use a surrogate test to prove anything. And that is what is happening with these tests. So if you have forgotten about how obvious the PCR test is the illusion here, let me reiterate this for you. Tel Aviv University Faculty of Medicine Department of Microbiology and Clinical Immunology Immunologist Professor Mati Gerlich today referred to this, well, on the third, referred to the tools we use to diagnose COVID-19, saying, quote, "The tests that give us a measure of people who have probably met the virus do not give us a true measure of sick people. A person who tests positive for the virus should be distinguished from a sick person. The test being used is a positive polymerase chain reaction, or PCR test. Some scientists and experts have increasingly warned the PCR test does not necessarily mean the virus is present, infectious, or viable, nor does the PCR test detect the whole virus." You've heard this from 1,000 different angles, right? Let's pretend like the university faculty of medicine department of microbiology and clinical immunology professor is a fake news anti-science conspiracy theorist, right? But it says, Laniato Hospital Emergency Medicine Department Director, Dr. Amir Shesher, one of the founders of the emergency medicine profession in Israel, said, quote, "Most of the people identified as carriers are not sick, or they are very lightly ill. And I'm trying to say that this figure of 3,000 or 4,000 new patients a day is simply using wrong definitions." Exactly. "There is no disease that is diagnosed by identifying the contagion in the throat, except that's what's happening. There also needs to be symptoms, and most people that identified as positive and get the label sick are not sick." It's amazing how obvious this is, but mainstream media won't report it. That's how that works. That's what I think, who called it the hermetic. I forget who said that. But you know, the control over the flow of information is what the mainstream is all about. Dr. Thomas Cowan explained, "So what is the surrogate of a PCR test? It's otherwise known as a viral load test, and the test is a surrogate test. It was developed by a guy named Kerry Mullis, who was given the Nobel Prize in Chemistry for essentially inventing the technique of this test. And he said very specifically, quote, and you can look it up for yourself, even the Reuters fact check was forced to retract what they said here, you cannot use this test to either prove infectious etiology or to diagnose an infectious disease. Very clearly said that, which of course is interesting, because if you can't use it to diagnose an infectious disease, that of course begs the question, what can you use it for? This is really interesting to me, by the way, sort of burying the lead a little bit here. Interestingly, it appears there may be a history of using PCR to help replicate biological weapons. As possibly suggested in the American Society for Microbiology papers published on the NIH website entitled Cross-Institute Evaluations of Inhibitor-Resistant PCR Regions for Direct Testing of Aerosol and Blood Samples Containing Biological Warfare Agent DNA. We'll look at these right here. Isn't that interesting? As well as that say, quote, PCR is used to detect biological warfare agents, or BWAs, from various sample types. Wasn't that interesting? And development of quantitative real-time PCR assays for detection of qualification of surrogate biological warfare agents in building debris and leachate. Here's the other one. Now, before I get to that, and I'm going to look at those afterward, but the point here is that there's an interesting differentiation here, the PCR test, that I don't think has been defined clearly. Then we talk about the replication, what it'll explain here. As it turns out, we're talking about actually replicating the virus itself. So when he says to help replicate biological weapons, in essence, you are making more of it, as well as more virus. So I don't think it's enough to make that much of a difference in a larger scale. But if you're constantly getting tested in a way that's more just making more virus, I mean, I find that very interesting. Not in a way that I find to be incredibly relevant to larger illusion, but just something to think about. And you'll see what I mean when I read this through. Dr. Cowan continues, quote, "But let me back up here and describe what a surrogate test means, because this is very important to understand the situation currently. A surrogate test means that in a situation where you're trying to prove causation, you have to have a gold standard test first. And those postulates, like with meningococcus, which is, what specifically is that? Let's look real quick. What kind of illness? Bacterium involved in some of the, oh yeah, that's what I thought. So meningitis essentially and some other issues of infection. That is a gold standard test. It's reliable 100% of the time. That's what you would need as a basis to then use a surrogate test. Quote, you cannot use a surrogate test to prove anything, as Kerry Mullis himself said. And that is what's happening with these tests. So what is the surrogate test? So remember that we don't have a gold standard. We don't have isolation, purification, reinfection, which is Koch postulates. We don't have viremia, which that's in the blood, like a clear evidence in the blood. We don't have millions of copies demonstrated in an electron microscope. We essentially have no idea what has this coronavirus disease. Who has this? So then they take a piece of one of the coronaviruses, the new one that they found. It has a new RNA sequence that hasn't been found before. This is the narrative anyway. So they take one of the sequences, which they say is unique to that particular virus. They do something called amplify. Here's the point, what I was saying before. And what that means is in your blood, you'll have one copy of this sequence. And it's too small. You can't find it. So you simulate it. And this is what Kerry Mullis came up with. You simulate it. So they're making it up. Simulating it. It's a copy, but it's something that's, it's very interesting to me. It says it makes two copies. That's one cycle. You make four copies. That's two. You make two to the 20th copies, whatever number that is, that's 20 cycles. And what you find with this test is that once you put it through approximately 36 cycles, you start to see the color change that tells you it's positive, right? We've already talked about this 35 cycle threshold. Fauci himself said this. If it goes over 35, it's not replication competent. He can say that in the middle of 2020, and yet we continue using that cycle threshold, right? I mean, we have to ask why that even makes sense and how that's possible. If you know it's not working, why did it continue?
Evolving into a bit of a standard that if you get a cycle threshold of 35 or more, that the chances of it being replication competent are minuscule.
Mm. Yep. 2020, like July, I think. And in fact, it didn't stop it. It went higher. Over 40 is what we've been seeing on average around the country, even to this day. But on the other side, on breakthrough cases, they used, I think it was 28 and below. Again, one of the most obvious examples of them knowingly trying to manipulate you. That's a guarantee to find less on the side of breakthrough and find more where it's not there on the side of COVID cases before the injection. But it goes on to say, so here's where it gets interesting. If you do it 40 times, which is what most everyone in this country is doing, even their own documentation says that they're supposed to do that, you start seeing a lot more positives. And then there's something else to know. And I didn't know this. This is interesting. If you go all the way up to 60, amplify it over and over and over again, it becomes a positive 100% of the time. How does that not paint the picture for you? It says, let me say that again. If you amplify it 60 times, it will be positive with everybody. That means that everybody has a piece of this RNA somewhere in their cells or in their genome or somewhere in their secretions. If all you have to do is amplify it enough. So if you keep looking hard enough, you'll eventually find what you think what you're told is COVID-19. But also that seems to suggest that maybe that's not what we're actually looking at, right? But it goes on to say, then if you want to demonstrate that the epidemic got better, all you have to do is lower the amplification cycles to 35, and then suddenly your vitamin C, your vaccine or chloroquine or whatever you're giving people worked. just like that. And now there's no more people testing positive. That is fraught with problems, and that is the problem. And now we're, I mean, look, even look, think about this. This is what's crazy. I think this also continues to demonstrate that I think the whole leaky vaccine thing might have been part of a plan that didn't go to plan. Just a thought. I'm total theorizing there, but because the point being is leaky vaccines, if done the way that they're supposed to be, which, you know, you're not supposed to make it like that, but under the definition, what they ultimately would do would seem to only affect the unvaccinated. That's the idea. But here now we're seeing a lot of other problems only affect the vaccinated, right? So they lowered the cycle threshold to 28 after, and nonetheless, we're still seeing this go through the roof. I don't think it worked out the way this was supposed to go. Just my feeling. But isn't that interesting? Both that it's obvious this is being used, but then these two parts here. This is used before all of this specifically to test for biological warfare samples, you know, bioweapons. That's an interesting tie right there, isn't it? This is from 2014, you know, right when they outsourced their biomanipulation research to China and continued it. Rapid pathogen detection is crucial for the timely introduction of therapeutics. Two groups, one in the United Kingdom, one in the United States, independently evaluated inhibitor-resistant PCR reagents for the direct testing of substrates. In the UK, a multiplexed, basically anthrax, and Bacillus subtilis, but this is anthrax, was used to evaluate four reagents against five PCR inhibitors. Isn't it interesting that's anthrax of all things? The United States, four real-time PCR assays targeting anthrax. I looked these up before. Venezuelan equine encephalitis virus and all these. Basically, testing for biological weapons or agents against buffer, blood, and soil samples and down-selected the Kappa Blood Direct Master Mix. Both reagents were tested against seven contrived aerosol collector samples containing anthrax, Ames DNA, and B. subtilis spores from a commercial formulation. Right, they're making them themselves, which they never supposed to. They don't admit that's happening, right? In PCR assays with reaction mixtures containing 40% crude sample, an airfield collected sample induced inhibition of the B. subtilis PCR with the Kappa reagent and complete failure of both PCRs with the, in capitals, fast virus reagent. I guess they coined that. That's something they're working on, the fast virus reagent. Now, this is just something interesting that I want you guys can read into this however you want. I think it's most telling that this was used specifically to identify bioagents, and now it's being used to detect something that's in your blood that's supposed to be organic. For the very first time, we use it on this wide scale. Isn't that telling? 2007 goes back even further. For detection and quantification of surrogate biological warfare agents, the objective of the current study was to develop and validate SYBR green qualitative PCR testing for specific detection of qualification of surrogate biological warfare agents in synthetic building debris. And now it's being used to detect organic, we're told, viruses in your blood. Out of nowhere, right? Even though Kerry Mullis said the one who made it, that's not how it's supposed to be used, but they just pluck it out of obscurity and use it just for this one thing. I'm not buying it. The developed PCR assays are highly specific and sensitive, and can be used for monitoring the fate and transport of biological weapon surrogates, such as the ones they list here, and debris, and at the same point. Pretty interesting. Now, here is why we bring this up today in particular, other than just to point out another highly regarded expert who's telling you these things aren't working the way they were told they are, and all the governments ignore them because that's the way they use this to manipulate everything. This is on December 13th. It's new. It's from the frontline doctors. CDC withdraws support for PCR tests. Now, you could frame it that way if you want. Take it however you want. I don't know if it's necessarily them. I mean, it's obviously that's what's happening. Like, if they're removing the emergency authorization and telling them to use something else, it's obviously them saying, this, we shouldn't use this anymore. But that's not what they said, just to make it as clear as possible. So I can already promise you the corporate media field is going to argue this is misrepresentation. But look, come to your own conclusions about it. You'll see it's very obvious. Now, it says this, and we already talked about this, by the way. The CDC will no longer recognize PCR tests as valid methods of diagnosing COVID-19 by the end of the year. Now, is it somehow at the end of the year they are, you know, they're valid up until then and then suddenly they change? No. So if they've already decided they're not working, or whatever reasoning they have for pulling it back, why isn't it instantaneous? All this time they've continued to use it, even though, I mean, that doesn't make any sense. It's sort of like them screaming we're in emergencies, so we're going to initiate these things in a month and a half. It's just so stupid and obvious. But it says the CDC announced in a lab alert, which we'll show you next, we already showed you before, on its website that it will be withdrawing its standing request to the FDA to grant emergency use authorization for the PCR test, even though we've continued to fall short of the justification for that authorization month after month after month. It's still continued because it's an illusion. But it says that they for tests to be used against SARS-CoV-2, the request, which was issued in February 2020, will be withdrawn. And those but remember, this is Trump's administration, right? Or at the very least, it was put forward during his administration. And it says will be withdrawn on December 31st, 2021. A move which signals that the CDC will no longer approve of the PCR test as valid diagnostic methods for COVID-19. Down here it says, currently the false positive rate for PCR tests is reported to be at least 5%, which is way more than that in every verifiable way. What they're pointing out here is this is what they're admitting to. Do you remember when I said they admitted to, I think it was 3% or something like that? Like what was it before? I forget what they were admitting before, but here they are admitting 5%. So that's what they're saying. As they point out, even that means that in countries such as the United Kingdom, where over 1 million people are being tested daily, around 50,000 people a day are diagnosed as positive and consequently undergo severe measures like quarantine, isolation, despite not being infected at all. In countries like Australia, which rapidly transformed into a police state after just 400 COVID-19 positive cases were confirmed, so they've confirmed with this PCR test, false positive results can have dramatic effects. Obviously, because they're using these tests to control people. Here's where we can just make sure you know that this is actually what they're saying. After December 31st this year, so in 14 or 15 days, the CDC will withdraw the request to the FDA for emergency use authorization of the PCR test. The SA first introduced in February 2020 for detection of SARS-CoV-2 only. CDC is providing this advance notice for clinical laboratories to have adequate time to select and implement one of the many FDA authorized alternatives. So this means that using PCR test after the 31st is not allowed. I could promise you that's going to keep happening. Visit the FDA website for a list of authorized diagnostics. I'll look at that in a second. In preparation for this change, CDC recommends clinical laboratories and testing sites that have been using PCR tests select and begin their transition to another test. When this first came out, that's what we said. There you go. This was a long time ago. This was on July, right? So what we're talking about is them admitting this is not the valid, that we don't want to use this test anymore, or at the very least, they're going to allow the emergency authorization to lapse and use other things in the remainder of the pandemic. So there's no way to misunderstand this. They, of course, went out of their way to argue, oh, no, this is just the emergency authorization is going away. Nothing to see here. So if it's the gold standard, why wouldn't they keep using it then? You childish people. Like, they don't want to admit that it's obvious what that shows you. I just thought that was funny that in the media, that right when this came out, that was their argument. That we were misrepresenting it. Fact checks all over the place. Well, here's what they represent as their choices. Okay, so in vitro diagnostic that are authorized right now. You have from the bottom, you've got tests for patients. But what they make clear, this is to detect biomarkers related to inflammation. And they only say this is for people that are already sick. Okay, so that doesn't really apply to what we're using PCR tests for. So that's out of the picture. Here's the antibody tests, which are detecting antibodies. They're not going to want to do that because then they're going to find people that have antibodies who aren't actually sick. Okay, so what's going to happen is it falls down to the diagnostic tests, which is what the PCR tests are. So then it only leaves antigen tests. That's it. Here's the link for you. All right, so it tells you the different tests. And, antibody tests look for antibodies. And they're saying they should not be used to diagnose COVID-19 infection. Exactly. Even though that could be used. That's not going to be used. So it leaves molecular and antigen. That's the only types of tests that are left. Molecular are PCR tests. So in this, where they're going, use all one of the other many authorized alternatives. They're basically saying antigen, which is what they probably should have said. I think there's a reason they didn't say that. We've already talked about the antigen test before. Oh, you know what? And I should have grabbed this. Probably not going to pop up. Oh, there you go. Look at that. That's from a long time ago. This is so perfect. This is just such a ridiculous situation. So back in 2020, when they were trying to push the PCR test on you, what they knew didn't work. They were going, no, don't use the antigen test because there's an issue with false positives. And it wasn't just this one version of it. There's a lot of conversation about how antigen tests were just as rife with false positives. It's pretty funny and alarming. But okay, so that leaves us with another test that they're going to shift into, which is just as easy, in my opinion, to use to keep the illusion going. Isn't that ridiculously perfect? But, and I wanted to show you this as well. So this is the list of all the tests, commercial and laboratory, that are used or available, I guess. You'll find that almost all of them are PCR tests, which tells you something. How does that make sense when this was something that was barely known until suddenly, and then they emergency authorized it just for COVID right in the middle? Like, this was predetermined, and all these groups are out here making these PCR tests as fast as possible to be part of COVID-19, and now they're going, nope, no longer. So these, like, all of these companies are just going to fail, probably, even though all they're really just adapted to something other than COVID-19 until it comes back. But if you look at the information here, I'm trying to find, here we go. I can only find like one other molecular test in here that seems to not be PCR test. The rest are all antigen. And I'll leave this included so you can look through it for yourself. Then I had to go through this one more time, guys. For those of you that know what this is, there's a couple of the points I'm going to make in here that I haven't made before. But on the note of PCR test, for those that haven't seen this, this is one of the most obviously relevant points from long before this started that says, this is how this is going to work. PCR test, make an illusion happen. We know that's what this did, and we know this is going to happen in the future. This is from the New York Times from 2007. The title, it's only on the Wayback Machine, or maybe I only saved it on this, but I think it was one that was removed or changed. Either way, faith in a quick test, can you guess what that test was? Leads to epidemic that wasn't. Now, I feel like you guys, even though you see me read this, I feel like we should all, I almost enjoy going over this every time because of how clear this is and how aggressively they don't want you to realize that this is what's happening right now or that this is what they're abusing right now. For those that haven't seen this, get ready. For 2 weeks, it says, starting in mid-April in 2006, this Dr. Brooke Herndon coughed seemingly nonstop, followed by another week when she coughed sporadically. Annoying, she said, everyone who worked with her. Before long, Dr. Catherine Kirkland, an infectious disease specialist at Dartmouth, had a chilling thought. Could she be seeing the start of a whooping cough epidemic? Now, by late April, other healthcare workers at the hospital were coughing. So just, again, the whole time, keep in your mind, just overlap this with COVID the whole time. Suddenly, we're seeing cases and people are having symptoms that are just like the flu symptoms, just like the cold, just like everything else. But we've been told these symptoms are something special, so we see those in everything, right? Back to 2006. It was the start of a bizarre episode at the medical center. This is the story of the epidemic that wasn't. For months, nearly everyone involved thought the medical center had a huge whooping cough outbreak for months with extensive ramifications. Nearly 1,000 healthcare workers at the hospital in New Hampshire were given a preliminary test, furloughed from work until the results were in. 142 people, in fact, including Dr. Herndon, were told that they had the disease. Thousands were given antibiotics and vaccines. Thousands were given vaccines. Hospital beds were taken out of commission, including some in the intensive care. Starting to sound familiar? Then, about 8 months later, healthcare workers were dumbfounded to receive an email message from the hospital, 8 months later, informing them the whole thing was a false alarm. The whole thing. 8 months of vaccines and lockdowns and administrations and isolations. To a smaller degree, this did happen. Antibiotics, vaccinations, intensive care hospitals, exactly like we're seeing today. All a false alarm. Not a single case of whooping cough, not even one, was confirmed with the definitive test, which is growing the bacterium pertussis, which is whooping cough, in the laboratory. Right. So that exactly what... Oh, don't do that. Okay, good. I almost refreshed it. So that's what the definitive test today. And that's what's not happening. We're going off of a PCR test that is not capable of telling you whether you're actually sick. It says that they were afflicted with ordinary common cold. Exactly. And this was proven by the test they did in the laboratory. They had the cold, the common cold. which is also a coronavirus, interestingly enough. It says, now, as they look back on this episode in 2007, epidemiologists and infectious disease specialists say the problem was that they placed too much faith in a quick, highly sensitive molecular test that led them astray. You know what that test is. They'll say it in a second. There are no additional data on pseudoepidemics caused by an overreliance on such molecular tests, says Trish M. Pearl, an epidemiologist at Johns Hopkins and past president of Society of Healthcare Epidemiologists of America. So clearly somebody that today they would say you should listen to, right? But she said pseudoepidemics happen all the time. The Dartmouth case may have been the largest, but it was by no means an exception. You could literally argue that fake pandemics happen all the time on Twitter right now, and you'd probably be censored for that. Here's Johns Hopkins expert telling you right now from the past. It's a problem, she says, quote, we know it's a problem, says Dr. Pearl. Quote, my guess is that what happened to Dartmouth is going to become more common. Now, prophetic. Their very sensitivity makes false positives likely. Obviously, we're talking about the PCR test here. The very sensitivity makes false positives likely. Look at that. And we're debating about it today? When the creator and the past users, and I even referenced that person right in the beginning that was using PCR test to test muscle samples, like mussels in the water, like, you know, seafood. And he spoke up right at the beginning and said, really? You're using this? They get false positives all the time. You know, it was just crazy. So the very sensitivity makes false positives likely, says the experts. And when hundreds of thousands or thousands of people are tested, as occurred at Dartmouth, false positives can make it seem like there's an epidemic. Shocking. It's almost like that's possible now, right? Quote, you're in a little bit of no man's land with the new molecular tests back in 2006, said Dr. Mark Perkins, or rather 2007 when this is being published, an infectious disease specialist and chief scientific officer at the Foundation for Innovative New Diagnostics. So like the very person who knows this stuff, a nonprofit foundation supported by, guess who? The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Quote, all bets are off on exact performance. So, same thing. We're using that today. And it's not like there was some rapid evolution of this. This was emergency authorized when this started. This wasn't some test that had been vetted out and proven to everybody and been sitting there and we used widely. This is something they forced in for this use, even though they knew it was not right for this. As examples like this and experts from the past and Kerry Mullis himself had made clear, this is how obvious this all is. It says, of course, that leads to the question of why rely on them at all. At face value, she says, obviously they shouldn't be doing it. At Dartmouth, the decision was used to use the PCR test. And see, at the point is when they wrote this article, it was still an acronym because it was unknown. Like, you know, it wasn't just PCR, it was P.C.R. for polymerase chain reaction. It's a molecular test that until recently was confined to molecular biology laboratories. It says, yet epidemiologists say, one of the most troubling aspects of the pseudo-epidemic is that all the decisions seemed so sensible at the time. Right, and this is the argument for why a lot of these people who call you crazy don't even realize they're in the midst of a pseudo-pandemic. And this is, I mean, this is why we always reach out, you know, call out the WHO document. If I can get it to come up real quick, include that as well. How do I do that each time? That's the wrong one. How do I do this? And then it goes, and I somehow managed to get back. See, I did that. Well. But you guys, I forget how I grabbed that last time. It popped up for me. Because what's funny is you refresh this page and you can see it pop up for a second. And then it disappears because they're hiding this from you. There, and that's gone. Oh, I know what I did. There it is, the archive. And again, ask yourself, why? Oh, they're revamping their website. I guess only that one page, because they've been revamping that one page for about 6 months now. But here's the point that I was making in this article back from 2011, Health is More Than Influenza, where the WHO calls out their repeated pandemic health scares are part of a culture of fear. Again, all this was there. Everybody was calling out these fake things, and then something took control of this and pushed all of them out of the way. And now they're using that manipulation. It says that was the first problem in deciding whether there was an epidemic at Dartmouth. Almost everything of the clinical presentation of pertussis, especially early pertussis, is not very specific. So that's the first problem in deciding whether there was an epidemic. But it says the second was with the PCR test, the quick test to diagnose the disease. With whooping cough, she said, quote, there are probably 100 different PCR protocols and methods being used throughout the country. Sound familiar? All of this is a model that was applied in order to make this easy to manipulate. And it is unclear how often any of them are accurate. You'd think they would change it by then if they knew this then. But see, that's the point. They're using that exactly the way it is. Quote, we have had a number of outbreaks where we believe that despite the presence of PCR positive results, the disease was not what we were told. At Dartmouth, when the first suspect of whooping cough cases emerged and the PCR test showed whooping cough, doctors believed it. The results seemed completely consistent with the patient's symptoms. Again, seem relevant and tied to what we saw today. Oh, they have a cough and a headache. Well, they must have COVID. And the test said they're positive. So there you go. Except that's not what's happening. We're getting false positives and people are having any number of things. Pneumonia, flu, cough, cold, doesn't matter. Quote, that's how the whole thing got started, Dr. Kirkland said. Then the doctors decided to test people who didn't have severe coughing. And guess what? They had pertussis too. Same like what's happening today. Quote, because we had cases we thought were pertussis, whooping cough, and because we had vulnerable patients at the hospital, we lowered our threshold. This is like exactly what happened step by step. All of a sudden, we started testing people in nursing homes. And what do you know? Everybody had COVID. And well, they all started dying. Anyone who had a cough got a PCR test. And so did anyone with a runny nose who worked with high-risk patients like infants. And every one of them were testing positive, even though none of them had what happened. Quote, that's how we ended up with 134 suspect cases. 134. If you're thinking this is somehow, if you don't trust the idea that this is an illusion today, how is it possible that you can have an entire epidemic with none of them, not some, not the majority, not part of it, none of them had this, none. All of them were false positives, and yet we're going to pretend like it's not possible today? Dr. Kirkland added that why 1,445 health workers ended up taking antibiotics, right? That's why they did this. They got false positives. That's why 4,524 healthcare workers at the hospital, or 72% of everyone there, got vaccinated in a matter of days. Think about that. Quote, if we had stopped there, I think this is one of the most important parts, guys. If we had stopped there and not found out that it wasn't real, I think we would have all agreed that we had had an outbreak of pertussis and that we had simply controlled it. Think about that. So right now, that's what they're driving at. We want to get to the other side of the hill so we can argue we did it without ever looking back and proving that it was never really there. Finally, they had their answer. There was no pertussis in any of the samples. Quote, we thought, well, that's odd. Maybe it's the timing of the culturing. Right. So again, this is what's happening today. Well, maybe it's the PCR. Maybe we can up the PCR test. Maybe it's because of this. Instead of addressing the real problem. Quote, it was going on for months, Dr. Kirkland said. But in the end, the conclusion was clear. There was no PEP epidemic. Finally, the last quote, the big message is that every lab is vulnerable to having false positives. Oh, you'll get censored for saying that today. No single test result is absolute. And that is even more important with the test result based on the PCR. Remember in the beginning when they said 100% accurate? Remember that? That's how silly these people are. That's how dumb they think we are. This is why I argue that it is very possible, at the very least, that this is all an illusion. Like literally every part of this. I'm not sure if I think that. I'm on the fence about it, to be quite honest. And I go back and forth with new information. But what's clear to me is that this is an illusion. Every part of this is being lied to you about. Doesn't mean there's not some of it there, but they're being, they'll take the real thing and they'll exponentially argue it's even higher or larger or times to by 10. They're lying to you about every aspect of this, guys. And this is why I point to the WHO saying they did this. They're lying. It's a culture of fear. They're saying that basically in both pandemics of fear, the exaggerated claims of severe public health threats stemmed primarily from disease advocacy by influenza experts like a Fauci. In the highly competitive market of health governance, the struggle for attention, budgets, and grants is fierce. And the pharmaceutical industry and the media only reacted to this welcome boon. Of course they did, right? Disease experts wish to capture public attention and sway resource allocation decisions in favor of the disease of their interest. That's the WHO. You guys have seen this many times. These things need to be remembered. Are we pretending the world just changed all of a sudden? No, these people got driven away and they used these illusions, as we can see happening right now. Now, speaking of the other illusions around us, can't leave out the Imperial College of London in that discussion. Take a listen to what this guy presents. And you've heard all this, but it's just very interesting to see it laid out in such an obvious way. And I'm only including this because we're talking illusion right now. This is what began the illusion of risk. And this is being presented in front of government in the UK. Nobody cares.
Which have driven government's nervousness. And I want to explore them and put them on the record because I've been...
I believe that's loud enough. Let me know in the chat.
I look at this debate, this motion today, in the context of some dreadful forecasts and some dreadful assessments which have driven government's nervousness. And I want to explore them and put them on the record because I believe it is in the public interest, but I'm doing so, sir, within this motion. And I want to look at one or two in particular, Imperial and Professor Ferguson, who I have a great deal of respect for, and I will be careful how I phrase this. But I am concerned that some of the forecasting we've had has had a track record in, frankly, getting it wrong repeatedly. Professor Ferguson, in 2001, he predicted 150,000 human deaths from foot and mouth. Under 200 died. In 2002, between 50 and 50,000 deaths from BSE. In the end, 177 died. In 2005, 150 million people could be killed from bird flu. 282 died. In 2009, government estimate, based on his advice, a reasonable worst-case scenario for swine flu would lead to 65,000 British deaths. In the end, 457 people died. I'm happy to be corrected on any of those points, but that is the publicly available information.
And to make one point clear here, guys, that is not, as they might try to argue, well, because we got ahead of it and stopped. No, it's unbelievably clear when you look back through the history, as even the WHO points out themselves, this was not real. H1N1 was not real. It was a culture of fear. It was a health pandemic scare caused by pandemic cultures of fear. That's what it is. That's what they admitted. And this is specifically H5N1 and H1N1. But this is the same discussion about all the things he just listed off. They did not end up being what they said they would be, not because of their actions, but because it just simply wasn't what they said. And his point is that Neil Ferguson, along with all these people, continue to be catastrophically wrong in exactly the ways the government wants.
Coming forward to COVID, he predicted 85,000 deaths in Sweden, which round the Swedes up. In fact, 6,000 Swedes had died at the time. Anders Tegnell, Sweden's chief epidemiologist, said in September 2020, we looked at the imperial model and we could see that the variables that were put were quite extreme. Why did you choose the variables that gave extreme results?
Real quick, I'm sorry to break this. I wanted to show you something. It's just so strange to me. Now, I'm not ever arguing that I think these people should have to adhere to any restrictions. I just don't believe in this stuff. But let me ask you something. You don't notice these two women are sitting right next to each other and none of these people are 6 feet apart? Sure, they're wearing masks, or sure, they have the vaccine. That doesn't matter, though, according to their narrative. It's not that's supposed to be no matter what. They're arresting people for not doing this stuff. It's just baffling to me how ridiculous all this is, where we can be literally quarantining and arresting people, and then you can look at a party of government people dancing around each other. It's just, it's amazing that this is not as broken as it is in mind.
Said in September 2020, we looked at the imperial model. Forward to COVID, he predicted 85,000 deaths in Sweden, which round the Swedes up. In fact, 6,000 Swedes had died at the time. Anders Tegnell, Sweden's chief epidemiologist, said in September 2020, we looked at the imperial model and we could see that the variables that were put were quite extreme. Why did you choose the variables that gave extreme results?
Exactly.
I love experts, don't get me wrong, Mr. Deputy Speaker. I know we sometimes have our issues with them, but it is helpful if they are right, if only very occasionally. Johan Gisset, Sweden's former chief.
I gotta love the dry British humor. Like he's basically making a joke right there, like while trying to pretend like he respects them. Like, it, you know, maybe be right every now and again. You know, like it's just, that's how obvious this stuff is.
Epidemiologist said that Ferguson's models were, quotes, not very good.
Exactly.
The Washington Post quoted Gisetti saying that Imperial's forecasts were, quotes, almost hysterical.
Almost hysterical is what the Washington Post called it. And yet here we are, and he's still being used every step of the way to continue to be catastrophically wrong, exactly how they want him to be.
And this is the forecasting that has been part driving government action. Oncology professor Angus Dalglish in this country described Ferguson's modeling as lurid predictions.
Jeez.
He said that Ferguson and his colleagues were getting it, quotes, spectacularly wrong.
Exactly.
And I quote Dalglish, unfortunately, we have a SAGE committee advising a government that is devoid of any scientific expertise on speculative concepts such as the R number, which we now know is a reproductive rate, etc., and the need for everyone to stay indoors, even though the evidence strongly suggests that people are less likely to catch COVID-19 outside. So some of the scientific evidence may have...
Yeah, and that's just the part that I want to show you. Isn't it amazing how this stuff can be that obvious, that clear? It just shows you the illusion that we're experiencing here. Now, on boosters here, that are clearly the next stage of this push, right? I mean, children, immunocompromised, elderly, despite them not having data to back up any of that. Any of it. I just showed you on their own documentation. They don't have any data to back up that it's safe for pregnant women. They have no data to prove that it's safe for immunocompromised. They have no data to prove that it's safe for frail people with comorbidities, which is elderly, even though that's what they pushed it on, all of those categories. It's disgusting. But here we are pushing boosters again, despite everything we just talked about. The fact that three's shown not to work. The fact that none of these are shown to have any effect, that it's four times less than what we're dealing with before, that in all the increases they make for you anyway, increase of doubling of cardiac event, everything we've talked about. As Todd points out, a professor of law, 3 months ago, the FDA advisory committee voted 16-2 against boosters for the general public. We told you that then. Now colleges are mandating boosters for spring semester. Exactly. Many of whom said who had COVID this summer. COVID and three shots in an 18-year-old kid in 6 months. Are these people real? It's crazy. But I want to show you this video real quick, or at least parts of it, to show you how crazy this is in regard to the children. Like, remember this? I mean, even like Corbett would joke in the past, like, what about the children? That was always the argument, right? Anytime it was something that you know, your actions were somehow wrong. Oh, we have to think of the children. Won't someone think of the children? Like, these people are using these children like a battering ram. The very people that were screaming that they're all about the children, we're fighting for the children, you don't care about the children, are now using the children to keep themselves safe, or so they think. But here's what's happening to children. Because of these the fears of these meek people. And this really bothered me. Now let's see. So I do the same thing. Pretty sure. Yeah, here it is.
Yeah, there's some pretty scary stories. I mean, just have to go north of Austria, which is obviously Germany. And there are three stories, I think, that tell a really good story. The first one was reported in Die Welt, which is the equivalent of The Guardian in Germany. And it's essentially about the ritual humiliation of children who are asked to go to the front of the class and state their vaccination status daily. Those who are vaccinated are applauded.
Which, by the way, is an obvious violation of their rights. Well, I mean, let's be clear. We're talking specifically from a U.S. standpoint. But either way, guys, there's nobody should pretend that that's okay. Trotting them up in the class and making them openly spout their personal medical history. It's just so obviously how this is wrong. Wait, let me go back and I won't stop it.
And it's essentially about the ritual humiliation of children who are asked to go to the front of the class and state their vaccination status daily. Those who are vaccinated are applauded. Those who are not have to explain why they're not. So that's the one story I think that really kind of should raise an alarm bell for people who are for the mandate.
Like it's the child's choice.
9-year-old boy is
right? Like it's a child's choice. Like the parents aren't making those choices, but you're going to make them stand up and explain it. That's punitive. That is a teacher penalizing children because of their political stance, or rather their parents.
His substitute teacher be fired after she says that a teacher taped a face mask to her son's face when he did not wear it properly in the classroom. She spoke to us under the condition that we not use her name or show her face, worried her son could be further traumatized at school, but wanting other parents to know what is happening in one fourth grade classroom.
Don't forget, we already talked about the special needs girl who had it tied to her face, who's nonverbal and literally was like almost choking on the spit that was kept up in that mask. I don't believe anybody was held accountable for that.
I was furious. I was.
Just to kind of skip past a little bit, there's a few things in here. So it's a 20-minute video, so I just wanted to show you some of the things that we saw here. Here, let me just do this.
Water, forgot to put the mask on. Teacher then did not tell him to put it back on or send him to the office. She instead pulled him up in the front of the classroom in front of all of the students, and she then taped the mask across the top of his face.
The mom says the sub added a second layer of tape from his nose to his forehead, and with tape still on his face, he went to the office to pick up homework he'd forgotten at home and his dad dropped off.
When he went to the office to pick up
and alerted the principal who
on their face.
Son had other students.
A mother in Colorado Springs says her child was forced to tape her mask to her face at school. Woman says it happened
there it
after
is.
The students.
This is a different person. This has been happening all over the place. How is this not child abuse? I don't care what you think that mask is doing. This is crazy. And people are looking the other way because they're cowards.
Mask kept falling off in class. This is a picture of it. Academy District 20 says it started getting reports about this happening at Chinook Trail Middle School last week. The school district.
I called my son's school in Brooklyn to find out what was going on. And the fact of the matter is that they have no metric. I asked, when are the kids going to be coming in for lunch? Under what temperature will the kids be coming in? And they said that it was fluid, that they just didn't know. And they had absolutely no plan as to when the kids would be allowed to.
And this is why these teachers especially are, it's just like any, like the politicians and everybody else. They're drunk with power. This gives them absolute power over their school. Right. They can make up the rules. They can decide you're good. Like if, especially let's say it's a principal or a teacher that has a kid they don't like and you know, they all have them. Let's not pretend like they're not going to apply things selectively to people they don't like. Every teacher, we've all grown up with that. We know. Like it's the same illusion we paint for ourselves that apparently when we grow up, all teachers are altruistic saints. Obviously, that's not true. Not true with nurses, not true with politicians, not true with doctors. They're people. And there's just as many of them that are evil, terrible people. Just the way the world works, guys. And so there's plenty of teachers out there pretending to be good people that are taping masks on children because they're disgusting.
To eat lunch inside. How strict they were going to be.
A variety of formats and in various locations if needed. Was that your experience? Did you have the option to bring your...
I asked the dean about that and she said that that's absolutely true.
Eating outside in cold temperatures. That's happening all over the place too. Places where it's below 40 degrees. These kids are sitting outside with a mask on. And the reason I say that is because they're being forced to wear it in between eating and where it's cold and you're hot and you're breathing and it gets wet, right? This is what drives illness.
Their coats, they don't zip up.
It's funny on that point. If we would have said before COVID started, like what would happen if you put a wet piece of cloth over your mouth all day or even for periods of time? Well, a doctor would say, well, you might get an illness, you might get an infection, you might get pneumonia, right? Like we all know that. That's what, but yet magically, when you talk about masks and COVID, every part of that goes away. Kindergarten is forced to eat out lunch outside in the cold to stop the spread of COVID. Ugh.
What the initials are, the TK, have a 5-year-old TK, if a third for speech therapy. He can't see his other one. Water fountains.
Well, there was one other point I was going to try to find, but at the end of the day, guys, it's there's a lot of this happening. It's all over the place. My daughter was unable to attend school today because nobody would teach her unmasked. Like, there's no exemption to this stuff today. Like, that's what we have to understand.
School the next day. Kindergartners. Forced to eat lunch.
You should watch the video for yourself. I'll include all this. It's a lot. There's a lot in there. But the most part, important part, were the beginning, you know, where you're making kids walk out and express their vaccination status, and then making children explain why their parents didn't tell them, make them. I mean, seriously? Like, it's like, I know teachers like that. I grew up with teachers like that. And those aren't good people. You're putting a child on the spot because you have some kind of grudge against the fact that they don't do what you think is right. And you blame the child for it. God, it just makes me sick. I think it's because I have many in my mind examples of that growing up, of people that took it out on me because of other things, or took it out, you know, because I don't know. It's just wrong. It's wrong. And we all know that. Here's another disgusting example from Funky Pigeon. Merry Christmas, refuseniks. Santa does not deliver to unjabbed kids. Father Christmas doesn't bring presents to unvaccinated. What you could have had for Christmas until they took it away, right? They took it down after people got upset about it. Now, somebody down here points out that you can still find it on, where was it? I don't know, you can look through the comments, but this is everywhere. They're literally telling children, because they want the children to scream at their parents that they want injections, because they want Santa. We got to have Santa. This is the same disgusting example that they gave on the Rogan podcast about how Sanjay Gupta was working with, you know, a lot of them were, with Sesame Street to manipulate children into getting the injections if they have no right to even be aiming at the children. Everything about this is wrong, and we used to know that. And here's the even crazier part. As of yesterday, 2 days ago, Los Angeles School District postpones the mandate until fall 2022, after about 30,000 plus students remained unvaccinated. Now, one, that clearly shows you this is not as one-sided as they want you to think it is. But on top of that, well, there's two other points. We're in the biggest pandemic in a century, but we're going to push it off until next year because, you know, it works for us. But I thought we were all going to die if we didn't do this, but we'll push it off until fall 2022. I mean, that's just so stupid. It doesn't make any sense. But on top of that, recognize all of the children that got forced to take it, and now they pull it back. All the children, the teacher and the parents who got coerced into getting their child to take this injection so they could go to school, and then they just pull it back. Didn't we just talk about this ebb and flow that we told you would happen, where they pretend they're going to force it, and they pull it back, and then they pretend they're going to force it again, and they pull it back, and they just keep, they're pressuring you to do it. And even then, they still can't move the dial on that the fully vaccinated number, especially now that they're going to change the definition. Now, I want to make a point on the Joe Rogan podcast really quickly about something here. This is entirely expected. From Zero Hedge, YouTube censors Joe Rogan interview with cardiologist Peter McCullough, Dr. Peter McCullough. Everyone saw this coming. Now, apparently they're censoring clips that are being posted, probably under the guise of, you know, that they're copyright, which, by the way, is what they do. And they don't even ask the person, that they just use the whatever excuse they can to bring this stuff down. But these are valid clips of expert testimony. You can argue that you disagree, that he's wrong, but he's an expert by virtue of his credentials. I don't care what you say about him. He is an expert. When they trot out a pediatrician on Fox or on CNN to argue about things about cardiologists should know, that's called using, you know, it's insulting to pretend like that's more valid than what he's saying. Either way, you can look up what he's saying. You can research the studies and find what he's saying. I've done it all since the beginning of this illusion. Nonetheless, we knew they would remove this stuff because that's what we keep telling you. It's not about facts. It's about narrative. But I wanted to point out a clip here that I thought was really, really ridiculous. And it's two people that are speaking on the Hill. And Kim Iverson is in this clip as well. And she seems to be the only one that's trying to offer up even the smallest amount of objective reality. But as I said, these two guys are either intentionally distorting McCullough's stance. They're talking about the Joe Rogan podcast. Or worse, they have no idea about it, which they basically admit. Yet, nonetheless, they're still attacking him while pointing at a clownish and reductive misrepresentation of what he actually laid out and his nuanced stance. And they actually cite Wikipedia. Yeah, yikes. It's really bad. And you'll see this in the clip, actually. So let me play this clip for you, and you can see. And I'll include the... Actually, I think I've got the... I'm just going to bring that up, actually. I forgot about that. I have the full clip, the full video here.
Dr. Peter McCullough went on the Joe Rogan Experience and asserted that the pandemic response was being executed before COVID hit the U.S. Let's watch.
So you believe this is a premeditated thing that they were doing. So they realized that in order to
So even that's a little bit misrepresentation, I think, because at the end of the day, he's talking specifically about the treatment, the early treatment. I do believe his opinions have similar context around the larger discussion, but that's, you know, in this part they're referencing here, he's specifically talking about how they knew, and you could prove this. Again, we've proven that there's discussions of remdesivir, of hydroxychloroquine, of ivermectin. They're blatantly ignoring this stuff and how it's very clearly with peer-reviewed research shown to have a dramatic effect. While remdesivir killed 53% of the people they took in the trial they used to justify this. 53%. I've shown it on the show myself. Check out the interview with Dr. Artis. He goes over it. So it's clear that they actively dragged their feet on things that the part you could say is subjective is whether they did it knowingly so it hurt people, or because maybe they were misinformed, or because maybe they had a money profit motive, however you want to frame it. But either way, the point is, damn, we should start over. Sorry about that.
Dr. Peter McCullough went on the Joe Rogan Experience and asserted that the pandemic response was being executed before COVID hit the U.S.
Right. Okay, so that's the general broad as a pandemic response. And by the way, the data does back that up, too.
Let's watch.
So you believe this is a premeditated thing that they were doing. So they realized that in order to get people enthusiastic about taking this vaccine, the best way to do that was to not have a protocol for treatment.
It's not just my idea. Now it's completely laid out by the book by Dr. Pam Popper, the book recently published by Peter Bregan, COVID-19 and the Global Predators, We Are the Prey. I wrote one of the introductions. Dr. Leaf and Dr. Vladimir Lozenko wrote the other introductions. These books are basically nonfiction. They have 1,000 citations in them.
Is it just me or is that sped up? Maybe I'm wrong. But I wouldn't put it past any mainstream media from altering these things the same way they altered Joe Rogan's picture when they talked about ivermectin. Tell me if I'm crazy or not, but that sounds like a little bit sped up in his voice.
Bregan book showing how it was coordinated and planned. Now Bobby Kennedy has his book, The Real Anthony Fauci. I'm the most mentioned physician in that book. I can tell you that if you want to find the evidence that Moderna was working on the vaccine before the virus ever emanated out of the lab, if you wanted to find the collusions and the operations between the Gates Foundation and Gavi and CEPI and Pfizer and Moderna and the vaccine manufacturers and the Wuhan lab and the National Institutes of Health and Ralph Baric and University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill and how all this was organized, if you want to see the Johns Hopkins planning seminar called the SPARS pandemic in 2017, where they had a symposium, people showed up, they wrote up their symposium findings, they published this. It says it's going to be a coronavirus. It's going to be related to MERS and SARS. It's going to come over here to the United States. It's going to shut down cities and frighten people. There's going to be confusion regarding a drug, hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin. And we're going to utilize all that in order to railroad the population into mass vaccination. It's laid out in the Johns Hopkins SPARS pandemic training seminar. The only thing that got wrong was the year. They said it was going to be 2025. Instead, it landed a few years early.
So McCullough also claimed that therapeutics had been approved to treat infected patients. 85% of deaths could have been prevented, but that suppression of early treatments was ultimately to promote mass vaccination. I haven't gotten a chance to actually watch this entire interview yet, the full entire interview. I don't know.
Okay, watch this, guys. Now, first of all, how are we having a conversation about something when none of them have clearly watched it? Now, at least she's willing to admit that. Now, just so we're clear, I like him. I think she does a great job. I think that when she's on mainstream media, they use her to make arguments and they use her objectivity to make it seem like she agrees. You'll see what I mean. But nonetheless, she hasn't watched it. And neither have they. Watch his face the guy on the left, watch his face in response to her asking if they actually watched the clip that they're currently attacking.
If you guys had a chance, early treatments was ultimately to promote mass vaccination. I haven't gotten a chance to actually watch this entire interview yet, the full entire interview. I don't know if you guys had a chance, Robbie and Ryan, if you guys had a chance to watch this. But, you know, really interesting. I do. I'm not sure.
Look at that. I mean, can you believe quite the decorum there, bud? You're really great at this. Like, he's so disgusted that she would even suggest he would watch it. And yet they're willing to stand here and attack this thing as if they know. You know why? Because they know already. oh, it's Joe Rogan and this guy. Well, they're fake, and we already know that. So therefore, what's the narrative? Oh, they do this, and they're lying about that. Got it. That's our story. Watch again. Watch his face. I can't even believe he was willing to be this obvious about it.
Of deaths could have been prevented, but that suppression of early treatments was ultimately to promote mass vaccination. I haven't gotten a chance to actually watch this entire interview yet, the full entire interview. I don't know if you guys had a chance, Robbie and Ryan, if you guys had a chance to watch this. But, you know, really.
I can't get past that. It's really bad. He's just like, oh, show me, I'm right. Luck, I would watch that. Yeah, good due diligence there, buddy. You're a great journalist. Way to attack things without looking at it first.
Really interesting. I do. I'm not sure what I think about what he's asserting about this being kind of a planned thing. I know a lot of people have thought that. There is a lot of interesting, parallels with some of these kind of, when you watch these sort of.
See, this is where I feel bad because I know, and I've talked to her personally about her opinions on this stuff, and she's trying to like struggle to not say the wrong thing in the mainstream media context. I just know that, and it makes me feel bad. Like she does. I mean, her individual work is much better than The Hill. And I think what's funny is this is her being, in my opinion, objective. Like, could it be that these are just, could it be coincidence, or could it be more, you know? And she goes out of her way to make it kind of like, well, it could just be that they plan these things out, and it could just be that they, which, you know, is called being prepared. And yeah, is that possible? Yes. So I can agree that that's something that could be, but the other side of that conversation, as you'll see, does not come into play. Like, oh, could it also be that they plan things and work together and theorize about, yes, history is undeniable, but these two fools will make the most ridiculous argument after she says this. And I just had to say that first.
There is a lot of interesting, parallels with some of these kind of, when you watch these sort of, they have those planned conventions that are like, okay, what would we do in the event of? And a lot of it looks like what's happening now. I've always kind of took it as, well,
the war games.
So, well, I always took it as this was it's kind of like disaster preparedness, right? When they say, okay, an earthquake's coming, what do you do? Well, you stand in the doorways. I guess you could.
Yeah, it's like when we plan for planes flying into buildings, and we prep that out multiple times, and then it literally happens the day we're doing that test. And then the next day we go, we never theorized about planes flying into buildings, right? These guys would laugh about that. It's easy to verify. And yet these two fools would laugh about that. Right now, I'm not going to try to defend the fact that I think that she's not. I think her opinion is different than that. Now, that's mainstream media for you. But nonetheless, watch what they say.
Could look at the manual and say, "Oh my gosh, they planned the earthquake. They knew it was coming because everybody."
Yeah, and that's a terrible argument. I have to say that. That's ridiculous because an earthquake preparation is nothing like planning out a disaster preparedness plan and outlining exactly what later happens, including the failures you make and the things you do that hurt people. It's like, oh, you planned out that you were going to do things that hurt people and it actually happened that way? Wow, right? This is just a sidestep, in my opinion.
Stood in the doorway, like the pamphlet said, but it's like everybody stood in the doorway because they were preparing for an emergency. So I've kind of thought of it maybe like that.
That's the only reason I give her that out is because maybe like she's playing devil's advocate, and I want the other side of that argument they'll never allow on the show. I've watched my interview with her, which says she says exactly the opposite.
We had the plague, we had Black Death, we had the Spanish flu in 1919, then we had MERS, SARS, bird flu. Like, we have entire agencies that are organized around defending against pandemics. Like,
and of course, we won't even get into the fact that there's obvious reasons to be suspect. Those are suspect. I mean, I just showed you the WHO document calling those exact ones pandemics of fear. Right? I mean, think about how crazy that is. In real time, I'm showing you the World Health Organization calling one of the ones he just stated a pandemic of fear that was based on hype. And yet here he is acting like that's ridiculous. If I were to say that on the show, he would laugh. These are the people influencing the mainstream discussion. That's how crazy this all is.
A pandemic is not a thing that just showed up in 2019.
Nobody's saying that, bud.
Right. And the world is out of control. The world is scary. And so for people who are frightened, you have these people like McCullough who come to them.
Yeah, right. So framing people that are researching this and aware that this is not dangerous, the frightened ones. Right. These are the frightened people. They're trying to rationalize why they're scared of this. And then when we see people like us that are like saying the opposite, well, I mean, there's a little nuance to whether McCullough thinks dangerous or not. But at the end of the day, largely calling people that question this the scared ones, the ones who aren't getting the injections, right? How does that make you the scared one when you're like, no, thank you, I'm good? That's the opposite of being scared. But you see, all they can do is make you that because that justifies what they think they're dealing with. That's why I point out that the mainstream talking heads, these what they call them, blow-dried idiots in ivory towers, have no idea about the real information, the real narrative. They're fed what they think is the top-of-the-line information. They think they're on the inside. They're in the know. My buddy in the CIA, we know everything. No, you guys are completely, what, like, no, I can't say that. I just got a cuss there. But these are people that are manipulated, and they think they're the top.
And say, actually, it's not out of control. Don't worry. In fact, it's all being controlled by Bill Gates and Johns Hopkins and the military in North Carolina and Moderna. And they got together and they planned all of this because it.
Like, again, you remember my tweet? Childish misrepresentation. That's not even, I mean, he's taking the surface level talking. He didn't even watch it. Remember, he made that clear. So he's taking the what he was written out about. New North Carolina and Bill Gates and stuff and their conspiracy. If you actually listen to what he's saying, he's talking about verifiable scientific research that shows these things, and it's clearly outlined on top of the fact that we know very clearly that Bill Gates was involved with planning for things in regard to 201 and everything else we've talked about. Did he say, and of course our stream's cutting out, there we go, come back in, all right. And did he say that this was some massive thing that was all being controlled from one central hub? No, but that's the only way they can make it look ridiculous to the person who wants to be told they're doing the right thing so they can go back to sleep. That's, I mean, it's just like with previous illusion, you know, conspiracy theories that get, that become some reductive idea of some people in a pizza place with a basement in Clinton, and it gets reduced down to the most absurd, childish, dumb narrative. When in reality, it's much grander than that. And now looking back on things like Epstein, we suddenly realize, oh, yep, it was always there, and that's how they hid it before. The very clear sexual blackmail network that people just like this would have said, you dumb conspiracy theorists, before they were allowed to talk about it. It's so sad. These are the people that are controlling other people's minds.
Don't worry. In fact, it's all being controlled by Bill Gates and Johns Hopkins and the military in North Carolina and Moderna. And they got together and they planned all of
it. Is he even remotely saying they're controlling it all either? No.
This because it makes people feel better.
Not if really.
They can feel like at least somebody's planning this.
Right.
And you know what he basically just outlined is the mass psychosis concept that Desmet's laid out. That what they're really doing is the same thing on their side, where they're desperate to find some plateau where they don't feel as anxious in regard to a lie. They all agree on the lie and they feel better about it. The moment we step in and prove them, look at what this documentation say, it pulls them into the anxiety again. And they can't stand it. They'll do anything to get back to where they feel a little less anxious.
Because then they're not just living in the chaotic, atomized modern world that they're living in. And so they just, they run for comfort. And McCullough will be
themselves.
A little bit careful about exactly how he puts it, but the people who receive it are like, oh, Bill Gates did this at John.
I mean, really? Like, that's the, this guy has no idea what he's talking about. Like, I mean, just look at you, Bill Gates, you know, it's Bill Gates and it's 5G, whatever, you know, whatever those little talking buzz points are. If he even listened for 2 moments of this, he would realize how dumb he looks, but it doesn't matter because the people listening to him assume he did all of his due diligence.
Johns Hopkins.
Right. And he is, I don't know this guy very well, so I just looked up his Wikipedia page.
Oh my God. So you're doing an entire segment on this guy and you don't even know who he is and you're just going to briefly look up Wikipedia and that's enough for you? This is journalism today.
And he apparently, you know, has said things that are not true, like a lot. Like,
right.
You know,
yeah. Oh my God. I mean, what is this guy from? He's just fresh out of college? I mean, this guy seems like these people are literally saying, oh, because Wikipedia said, therefore true. Anybody that's in college right now, please speak up. Let them know that none of your college professors are going to allow you to cite Wikipedia. And it's always been that way because that's knowably one of the worst sources of information out there. It's absolutely manipulatable by anybody who has control over the people that have what was that guy I pointed out in the past? One person has edited the vast majority of what's on Wikipedia. And yet they'll be able to look it up live on TV and go, oh, it says he lied. Oh, well, there you go. He lied then. Okay, it's just ridiculous.
So he was saying hydroxychloroquine works.
And
we know it doesn't.
And here's a warning to people.
Kim tries to, she speaks up and says that, you know, well, the Wikipedia is bad, so good for
Page,
her.
And he apparently, you know, has said things that are not true, like a lot. Like,
right. Yeah,
he was saying hydroxychloroquine works,
he said hydroxychloroquine works, we know it doesn't. That's it. End of conversation. It's staggering. It's not true, by the way.
People, here's a warning, people. Anytime somebody tells you how many citations there are in something,
that is a red flag.
Right. So anytime somebody tells you that this has been cited, run. Like, sure, somebody, like, the point is that you can look up what he's saying. And in fact, it's very clearly cited on interviews we've had with him, interviews that they've, I mean, it's all cited. What he's trying to suggest is that he's claiming citations without showing you on a podcast. right. This is just manipulation.
No, I agree completely. Yeah, that's a.
But I don't.
Yeah,
I don't know
anything.
If we should. I don't know if that we should be trusting necessarily Wikipedia when they label.
He says that didn't mean anything, right? It didn't mean anything. The things that we didn't look up.
Label people misinformation. So I don't think that's fair. I think they've been labeling a lot of people who've been giving actual true information as misinformation.
I think Wikipedia does that. I agree with you about like Twitter and Wikipedia is generally pretty accurate, but. So-
Like, they're both basically laughing at her expense right now. Run away from them, Kim. You're better than Hill. You're better than mainstream media. It's silly, though. Wikipedia is generally pretty accurate, right? Because we know that we're told that, of course, because that's all we need to do is repeat what we're told. Media. God, I mean, it's so blatantly obvious that Wikipedia is controlled. And that's why you can actually listen to people in college level that will tell you their professors will go, hell no. And yet your government uses that as a citation to prove what they're saying. Does that not tell you all you need to know?
So what I was going to say, though, so, yeah, the idea, I agree with you, Ryan. The idea that it's this planned conspiracy.
And I believe that guy is from The Intercept, by the way, or works with The Intercept, the Ryan guy.
See, is not right. But the idea he's getting at there, that the idea that it's this planned conspiracy is not right. But
don't you love that? So the idea that it's a planned conspiracy, that's not right. That's fake. That's wrong. Moving forward with no qualifying statements after that, just wrong because that we all know that's not the truth, right? It's not. There's conspiracies don't exist. God, these people are ridiculous.
But the idea he's getting at there, that a lot of people could have been saved, the deaths could have prevented if there were more therapeutics hitting the market faster, if there had been tests hitting the markets faster, even if the vaccines were special, that's all correct. But it wasn't a purposeful conspiracy to harm people or to herd them like sheep or cattle or whatever compliant animal down some other path. It's just the incompetence of our federal bureaucrats.
Right. Again, where's the qualifying information? So you did your research, right? So you've researched what he said. You've looked at the documentation. You've compared it with what the government said and researched their documentation. And you're going, look, I can brief right here in front of us. Clearly, they did not do this. No, he knows you're not supposed to say that. So we can, no, there's not a conspiracy. There wasn't this because I'm told that. This is what we're told to think. So that's what's happening, guys. Don't you see? Why do people listen to this garbage?
It's their laziness, their incompetence, the
Oh, and that's the other point. Listen to what he rattles off right here. So he goes, it's not a conspiracy, but it's because they're bad and they're cheat and they're criminals and watch as he basically says the same thing.
People or to herd them like sheep or cattle or whatever compliant animal down some other path. It's just the incompetence of our federal bureaucrats. It's their laziness, their incompetence, the kind of corruption.
Oh, wait a minute. Purposeful corruption? Wait a minute. What does that lead? So you mean, so they're purposefully corrupt and doing things that are corrupt, but there's not a conspiracy. They wouldn't get together and do corrupt things together. God, because that's crazy. I mean, I feel like almost in his mind, he's going, oh shit, wait a minute. I basically just said the same thing. I'm not supposed to admit that. I mean, I watch a lot. I mean, I don't often play mainstream media, but I had to play this because it's just that bad. And I don't know if this is where it's all going or these two guys are just especially ridiculous, but damn it, if this is not the most obvious thing I've ever seen.
Of the system, of the people, it took so long to get all this
right.
Stuff. And that,
right? Like, so they're corrupt and they're going to lie about that and they're incompetent, but they would never do that together to benefit themselves, because that's crazy.
Has resulted in lots of unnecessary deaths. We're going to have unnecessary deaths between now and Paxlovid hitting the markets because of incompetence.
Well,
so it's just not a conspiracy.
Okay, in fairness,
conspiracy. No, because that word's fake news, and we're told to say
Dr. McCullough, the hour that I did watch, I didn't get to watch the whole 2.5 hours, but the hour that I did watch, he did say that. He did say that.
Thank you.
The reason why the therapeutics weren't getting out there, because Rogan asked him, is do you think that was like a conspiracy to get people mass vaccinated? Why they weren't allowing for more data research on the therapeutics that they were demonizing, such as hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin and others that were out there. And he said, no, he, from his inside sources, they were just incompetent. The powers that be, the health officials, they just weren't, you know, they work for us. They're our health authorities. They should be studying things.
And look at those two faces. This is what it looks like when you're schooled, when you don't do your research and you make an argument about how dumb they are. And she comes in and goes, oh, but he actually literally said exactly that. So you're stupid. Right? I mean, good God. He just railed on a point about that he didn't do this, and she's like, exactly, that's what he did say. I mean, why wouldn't you cut that out? Why is this the clip that gets posted? Like, this, these people look ridiculous, and it shows you how lazy they are. Like, they just don't even care about the information. They only care about the narrative, and she's the only one stepping in here and going, well, he did say that, and she only watched part of the interview.
On our behalf, and they weren't. They just kind of put all the eggs in the vaccine basket and sort of ignored anything else that could have potentially saved lives.
And
that is pretty scandalous. I mean, like I said, the rest of the stuff he talks about, I'm not willing to just discount it like you guys are. I'm willing to say, I'm willing to look at, I mean, I don't see any evidence of that happening. I also don't see evidence of it not happening yet. So I'm willing to say it's possible what he's.
And here's my point about it again with her is, I myself am often taking the irritatingly objective stance. And plenty of people call me out for that and pretend like I'm just being wishy-washy or whatever. When I'm not, I'm intentionally trying to be as objective as possible in a time when nobody seems to be. And I respect that in her in this case, especially in the beginning, right? And this is the counterbalance. My point was the clip that I shared that the Hill put out made sure to cut off this other part of the argument, right? But the clip has it all. That's why I'm playing it.
Claiming, but you know, I think everything that anybody claims is somewhat possible until we prove it for sure to not be. But you know, a lot of his, but I do think the biggest point he made during this segment that I watched was that why weren't
I feel like somebody just exhaled right there, like maybe it wasn't supposed to be on the mic. Listen to that, like, oh, here we go.
You know, a lot of his, but I do think the biggest point he made during this segment that I watched was that why weren't the health authorities doing more to help the people that already got COVID? They were so focused, and we've been so focused during this entire pandemic on vaccinate, vaccinate, vaccinate. And it didn't help the millions of us who got COVID when there were no vaccines available. So what do you, and the millions of people who are now getting it.
Right. And that's a valid point, whether or not you think the injection's good or whatever. That's what McCall is saying, is that there was an entire period where they weren't focusing on prophylactic treatment or you know, vitamin D, healthy things, all the number of things that showed to have a clear effect. High levels of vitamin D and a peer-reviewed study has shown that it could possibly drop down your mortality to zero. Zero. I've talked about that a couple weeks ago. There's obviously a reason. Of course, the stream cuts out right when I say that. The reason being the vitamin D at high levels shown to bring your mortality down to zero is something that challenges the use of vaccines. So whether that was a choice or not, the point is they ignored all that stuff in the beginning. And whether the point, their argument or the narrative that goes forward showed that hurt people. So how can these two idiots pretend that it doesn't make sense?
I mean, are vaccinated. So what do we do?
Yeah, I mean, they manipulated the different treatment therapies that they could to, you know, they put people on ventilators. They did this was a very tricky and tough disease. It first appeared.
Now, yeah, stumble over your words and try to make good. This is a guy that is stumbling on his words to rationalize the big pharma choices and the government choices. Is this a journalist or is this a propagandist? Well, I think you just got your answer.
That it was, you know, mostly just respiratory. Then it turned out actually it may be much more vascular than it is respiratory. And if hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, you know, legitimately worked and could be demonstrated to work,
which they have, both of them. I've shown you multiple peer-reviewed studies, including one saying it's a Nobel Prize-winning drug with all sorts of effects from COVID-19, has antiviral effects, shows to stop the virus, brings the number, all of that. I have multiple studies. So again, he either doesn't know that, doesn't care, didn't do his due diligence, and just pretends he does because narrative.
Doctors would be prescribing it.
Okay. If it was, then they'd be using it, right? Isn't that the classic argument? Well, if this was a conspiracy, wouldn't somebody speak out? Yeah, that's what you say when you don't understand how these things work. If this was real, doctors would prescribe it. That's not true. I mean, there's 1,000 reasons why that's not true, but that's the government standing talking point.
Understand now what happened with ivermectin. Ivermectin, you know, basically deals with worms. And so when they were giving it to people in Bangladesh, in Africa, in a lot of places,
right, it was helping because it was killing off the worms they had.
Right.
Oh, my God. I mean, guys, this is not true. So because this had effect on the worms that apparently everybody in Africa has all the time, you disgusting racist, the point being that this just helped them all because they're all sick all the time. No, the documentation I've shown you 1,000 times over makes it undeniably clear to not waste any more time on these fools that ivermectin is obviously a valid possibility. I'm just going to show you the one from Science Direct from September. A multifaceted drug of Nobel Prize honor distinction with indicated efficacy against the new global surge. This isn't saying only because it removed the worms in Africa. No, this is everywhere. And the fact that it's shown to have efficacy in regard to specifically COVID-19, specifically antiviral. It's amazing that Ryan Christian in his room here can have more insight into The Hill and all of their fancy journalists, right? Because they're not that. They're talking heads that continue to lie to you. Very easy to show if you just care to look. Okay, now finishing off, the idea, guys, is why that's all happening. Because as James Melville points out, fear sells. Fear sells. And that's what they've used from the very beginning of this thing. And here's a Mail Online article. Omicron and Delta may apparently strike people at the same time and combine to create an even worse COVID variant in the coming weeks, Moderna boss warns. So first of all, it may do this, which means we don't know, so we're guessing. Who knows? It may combine with the flu tomorrow, and suddenly there's a new flu alt of Delta. There's nothing that backs this up other than the hypothetical concern that it's changed enough that it somehow is its own, you know. They're guessing. But that also says that it also comes from Moderna. Remember last time Moderna and Pfizer spoke up and fear-mongered and they gained $10 billion to multiple executives in their groups? That's why they keep doing this. Why are we reporting what Moderna says about hypothetical guessing about things that we should? They're a vaccine company. Why in the world are we listening to them about epidemiologist things in the world about whether viruses could combine? What Moderna's boss has to say about this means nothing. But it's because it's Moderna. It's vaccine. It's all what this is right now. And as I point out here, by the way, I don't know why nobody does this. I said, here's the link for those who want to confirm and investigate, because nobody seems to want to post links today. It drives me crazy. But speaking of fear cells, this is Queen's Park Bureau Chief of CTV News in Toronto, just simply puts out there, quote, there's a potential that it can spread in the air. Ontario's CMOH and Omicron variant. Okay, so where's the context? Oh, who cares about context? Let's just scare people, right? What about the fact that it's not much any more dangerous, that it's actually super mild, according to the WHO? So if it's spreading in the air, that doesn't make it that much more, it doesn't make it that concerning in regard to the risk to the individual. Or the fact that this has always been spreading in the air for aerosolized particulates that they just never really defined because they wanted you to think masks were having an effect. Or all the different things we keep talking about. But yeah, just float that one-liner so people go, oh, it's airborne, it's Ebola, we're all going to die. And they all rush into what you want them to do. This is garbage. But this is how it works today. Here's this is David Nabarro saying, WHO is saying unprecedented threat of Omicron. Seriously? Now, okay, just in case you all forgot, unprecedented means never done or known before. So he's actually arguing from the WHO that the Omicron variant that they literally moments ago said was super mild is never before seen in regard to the threat. This is where we get back to that point where we argue, like, are they trying to give you whiplash? Do they want to give you, like, literally contradicting arguments from day to day so you just completely lose it and just trust whatever they're telling you in the moment? Maybe. That's part of their manipulation tactics we've shown you before. But unprecedented now, when there's zero evidence of that, when nobody, like one person's been reportedly died in the United States or in the UK, excuse me, basically zero hospitalization in regard to only vaccine. I mean, come on. There's 1,000 reasons why this is not unprecedented even remotely, but they want you to be scared. Even more so, Londoners with cold symptoms are apparently more likely to have COVID now. So now the cold becomes COVID, which is probably already what's been happening. But nonetheless, it's just about keeping you hyped. So now you have if you have a sniffles or a cough, even a small one, now you're thinking COVID, just like you already probably were, but they're just jamming this back into your mind as we go into winter. So everything, anywhere, any sniffle, any cough, it's going to be COVID. That's what they're framing for you right now, and everyone's going to be scared. Because look, professor behind symptoms tracker says that Omicron variant causes headaches and sore throat and runny nose. Oh my gosh. Super scary, except that happens every single year. So is it possible this isn't even what they say it is? Yes. But don't worry, because we're just going to shift into some other fear or unknown thing that may become a new variant, or it may become Omicron itself, or may become a new virus going forward. It'll become whatever they want it to become, if it's even really happening. 89 Africans killed by mysterious new illness emerging in South Sudan. Right now, after all everything that just happened in Africa, and they're pointing out that only 6% of Africa is vaccinated, yet they don't have any problem over there, and now suddenly there's all these things popping off everywhere around Africa. Come on. This is ridiculous, especially since this is overhyped, when we don't even know what this actually is yet, and it's being pushed into your view. Just as the latest Delta-driven wave in SARS-CoV-2 washes over parts of the U.S., as we're being told, that already benefit from some of the country's highest vaccination rates, exactly, the WHO has dispatched an advanced team of researchers, very publicly too, make sure we all see it, to doctors to South Sudan, situated in northern Africa, where 89 people have been killed already by some strange new virus, or maybe some strange new injection that they're framing as a virus. Who knows, right? But it says, so the WHO dispatched a team to the area, which is one of the worst hit places on the entire continent to be afflicted by, not COVID, a recent severe flooding. Okay, so this group, this area is suffering dramatically from a massive flooding, and they're zipping in to save them all from an 89-death situation that doesn't seem related. Meanwhile, some 700,000 people have been impacted by the flooding in this area, including food shortages, illnesses, which are putting tremendous strain on what few healthcare resources they all have. But nonetheless, they're whisking in there to use those resources to study something for everybody else's benefit while not helping the people suffering from what's actually hurting them. Perfect little microcosm of what's happening today. People starving, people dying from all sorts of other things all over the place, people suffering from floods, and they whisk in to focus on vaccinations for something they haven't even verified is really threatening right now. You know how many people we could actually help if they really wanted to help people? This is, in my mind, I mean, even if you think these people went there for good intentions, it's going to be used like everything else. And don't forget that people like Dr. Boyle, Francis Boyle, the drafter of the Biowarfare Act that the U.S. government still uses, argues that these things are bioweapons. That these things have been used, Ebola, or the way that these things are all, every time they happen in Africa, it's a stone's throw away from one of their BSO4 labs. Finally, where it's all leading. Now, there's obviously multiple agendas around all of this, but one of the last things I want to get into is the bills, the authoritarian, totalitarian legislation that's being justified because of the fear they or the danger that they claim that you're in. And of course, on that point, we're going to finish by pointing out the parasite stress theory that we've talked about before. Before we get there, this is a great little tweet. Actually, I forgot I wanted to share that. These bills are real, he says. If you're in New York and want to voice your opinion on them, this thread will have the links to each individual bill, which it does. Good for him. Good for him. Now, what these are showing you, it's some pretty alarming stuff in New York City right now being justified by Omicron, despite it not being more dangerous. That's all they do, is they hype that it could be. It's unprecedented. We don't know where this is going. All that's used to force in what they were already going to force in, even though it's being shown to not be more dangerous. Just like what the Pfizer CEO said, well, the fact that it's not more dangerous is the most dangerous thing. It's like, cool. So either way, we're in danger. Great how that works out perfectly for you. What's actually creating the variants, which is why he said that, is the people who are injected but allowing this to continue to spread. The evidence is undeniable. But really quickly, here's what it says. January 5th, the legislative session begins. Here is a snapshot of just a few of the bills that are looking to be passed in New York City. Or this is a state, excuse me, New York State, NYS. So, first one, A8378, forced COVID shot mandates to attend school. Well, here they are. And it's very clear. These are not, there's not even, these aren't, the fact is nobody's being, the media is not reporting on this stuff. authorizes the Commissioner of the Health to develop and supervise the execution of a program of immunization against COVID for purposes of state aid to schools, requires immunization against COVID for attendance at school, which is already generally happening, but they're just enshrining it into law. Next one. Forces all adults' vaccine records into a state database. I mean, we just talked about this one. They're already doing this, but this is New York specifically. So now they're forcing your information into a state database, which is used to track you and can basically the federal vaccine database that's already being put forward is how that's going to work. And this is alarming to me in every possible way. Next one, forced flu shots to attend school and preschool daycare. You see, now we're shifting over to flu shots too, you see? So it's not, now it just went from, where was that one? It just went from COVID because we're in a pandemic to just going, well, since we're now rationalizing forcing things, we're going to force the flu shot too, because danger, pandemic, and fear are in the same thing. The flu shot that we've all been living with, that's all been generally just been your choice all this time. But now suddenly, if you don't do it now, we're all going to die. A2240. Here it is. Relates to mandatory influenza vaccines for persons attending daycare. Mandatory. Which, by the way, again, the point is this is becoming, if they make a universal one that talks about flu and COVID and everything together, guess what? Now you're going to be forced to take that one, even if you only wanted the COVID shot. So it says, eliminates religious exemptions for work and college. You can read through these for yourself. They're all cited. Why in the world would you make a law that eliminates religious exemptions? Are you pretending that nobody has a religious exemption? No, they don't care about it. They never did. They don't now. They're just making a law to remove it. It's that simple. And they're not telling you about it. It eliminates parents' consent to shots when a child reaches 14. It eliminates parents' right to consent to STD shots for children of any age. Allows the governor to imprison without trial anyone she considers a public health threat. A416. This is where the world is going. And if we don't do something, this is your future. And this is already happening, where they can remove you and your contacts if they deem you a potentially dangerous public health threat. Completely subjective. Read it for yourself based on what they see as a threat. That's complete absolute power. Finally, allows the governor to imprison without trial anyone she considers a public health threat. Oh, that's the one I just read. So that's, just read through these for yourselves. This is what they're building right now under the guise of you're in danger. Even things like this that not seem to have zero relation to what's going on in California. They've just banned generators under a guise of climate change, of course. Now, why would they ban generators? Why does that make sense? Well, it's a way that you have independent energy. Well, they don't want that, right? You need to have no privacy and own nothing, and you've apparently never been happier. That's what they're building for you. You don't have any choice. You have to tap into their power structure. They're in control. They can cut you off if you don't do what you're told, you see? So generators can't be allowed, right? Because it's old and archaic, and it's something they can do that we can't hack, that we can't turn off. And of course, again, you know, climate change, that's blending with what we're dealing with today. Just so we're clear on this, it's at least as it starts, they're saying, well, you can, if you have one, you have it. If you have an RV, you have it. But we're making them banned from here forward. You can't buy them. And eventually they're probably going to make them illegal to even use. Which if you think that sounds crazy, you would have thought it was crazy to say that they would ban independent generators. How is that even? I mean, the logic of that. Again, think about this, that they can go all the way over to the fact that they're telling you climate change is such a risk, even though that's debated openly in Congress, that they're going to tell you you can't have a generator. I mean, that's your personal choice to make something that has no effect on your current life, your personal situation. It's your right to buy anything like this you want. It's not illegal, but they're saying because of a risk that they see that they're going to stop that. You realize that logic can be applied to literally anything they then deem something that's tied up in climate change problem. Anything. Meat. Anything. Which is all where this is going. And here's the next part of it too. In New York City, on the other side of the country, they just banned natural gas hookups. Same point. In new buildings in efforts to fight climate change. Natural gas, both of which basically you can have as independent natural or not independent energy. natural and otherwise, things that you can do on your own that you don't need to tap into a central database or government-controlled system. Isn't that interesting? All of this being rationalized under what's being used, the momentum of COVID-19, climate change, passports, green passes, and all this, and we're all just shifting into the next thing. This is where it's all being rationalized, and it's being rationalized because of the fear around what they tell you is happening, even if it's not real. Now, this is something that Derek put out in August 20, 2020. This is the first part, by the way, of the parasite stress theory that we haven't talked about in a while. I added this to the breakdown here, exposing parasite stress theory, part one. Multiple studies predicted governments become authoritarian to in response to pandemics. Here's the first part, right? So everything he cites in here, guys, these studies predicted long before we got here that all the governments needed was the risk of a pandemic. And they make it clear in these studies, it doesn't even have to be real. Just the threat will drive your populace into a pliable situation where you can create what you want. Read these for yourself. These are going all the way back to the 2000s. And we're going to pretend that they don't know this? Let's just even say this is totally organic. Are we going to pretend like they wouldn't realize this in the middle of it and go, wow, let's take advantage of this? Read this one for yourself, but make sure you also read the part two, which is the most important in my opinion. The rise of authoritarianism, parasite stress theory to lockstep, which lockstep, the Rockefeller plan, which we all see is happening right now. These are studies that very clearly found that all you have to do is create a threat of a pandemic specifically, and people would fall into line. And they would allow you to literally create an authoritarian state. Things just like this. All these bills forcing adults to be vaccinated, forcing flu shots, eliminating religious exemptions, forcing you into jail because they think you're a threat. Guys, this is authoritarianism. It's not even veiled. I mean, it's obvious. Being able to just say, you can't have a generator now because we decided it's bad. That's authoritarianism. This, in part, is why this is happening. It's that clear. It's just time to wake up to it. Believe that was it. I thought I had one more tab there. Oh, and this was the end right here. So the British Medical Journal just put this out, and it's really just a quote from this person, a career serving the public health specialist. Views expressed are my own. I hate when people write that. As opposed to what? Retweets don't necessarily mean endorsement. Yeah, blah, blah, blah. I hate those things. But here's the point. She says, quote, while we must continue to implement public health measures to protect our domestic population, if we fail to act with a global focus, we will continue to see the proliferation of new variants of the virus. And this is not a new shift, but you're going to see this be more openly stated. This was always my point. This is the whole point of the South African point here, that it came all the way over there. So we could have had 100% and we still would have had the new variant. That's the argument, because it came from over there where they weren't have vaccines. So why should we all rush into this? If the argument doesn't make sense. We will never, ever, ever have 100% of the world. So therefore, there will always be this risk. They can just bring up a risk of a new variant. So suddenly, the South Sudan thing becomes the next variant because they just say it is, because that guy over there wasn't vaccinated. It never ends, and that's the point. Like the war on terror, like the war on drugs, these things never end because they're designed to never end. And here we are, pivoting into, now we got the focus on those people. Just like I coined it. I hadn't seen anybody say it, but back all the way back in the beginning, I saw where this would go in my mind, where I argued this would lead to vaccine wars, COVID wars, where we're going to frame this as Africa is putting us, or let's just say specifically South Africa is putting us in danger by not taking these injections. So we state that, let it build, keep the narrative going, hype up how they're doing even worse things over there. Now they're just having parties and no one's doing anything. Now they took their masks off and now all of a sudden you justify the hype. You justify the actual violence to force them to be injected. It's happening in its own countries right now. Germany and Australia, they're holding people down. So here we are watching this, and you have to see how they can rationalize in the scared minds of the public that we have to literally go in with force to make this happen. And the craziest part about this is that there are plenty of people out there who argue that they're anti-imperialists who absolutely endorse this kind of concept. Not under the guise that they would say it's, of course, we're going to go force the Africans, but that's what would happen. They would simply argue we're helping them, just like the U.S. government always does, except when they do it in the context of foreign policy, those same people scream foul, cry foul. But now those same people will be like, yay, go help them, government, because vaccine's good. This is the end result. And I think it's very clear where this is all heading. Hopefully it seems clear to you as well, but all we can do is continue to point out what we see and give you all the citations and the information. Now, by the way, I do know that it's been taking me at least till the next day to get the links up, and I apologize for that. There's a lot going on, but I will always get them up. And if I don't, please reach out, but I will. I always do no matter what. Thank you for being here today, guys. I just can't, I cannot stress how important it is right now to continue to speak up about how you see things, what you feel, what your research shows. Self-censorship today is the worst problem. Worse than it's ever been, because if we don't realize that we are the majority, this will go forward. And I'm telling you, we are this close. I almost feel like they're already starting to pull back, but that doesn't mean they won't shift into it somewhere else. That's why I always say stay vigilant. We have to continue to fight against this because they won't stop. They just won't. This is decades in the planning. But we are having an effect. You are having an effect. So make sure you understand that. Make sure you feel that. You're changing lives by helping people see what's going on. And I'm not saying because we're going out there screaming that this is the case or that's fake. Or it's because we're simply going, you should have a choice and here's why. Amazing that that's become contentious today. In a country that we proudly state that having choice is everything until we're scared. And then we say, oh, choice is fake news and conspiracy theory. Because that's all we're ever saying. You should have a choice. Of course, I've got my opinions. But our argument is your choice. They just bastardized that into saying something that we're not saying. So help us keep spreading it. I love you all. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.